Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, liberty-loving patriots. Welcome to the Lucid Libertarian with Lori Ann Show. Please be sure to tune in Sunday nights from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. Pacific Time, 9 to 11 p.m. Eastern, to discuss current events, news, and political opinion with Lucid Libertarian flair. Be prepared, folks. We often go into an optional extended third hour. This show advocates for liberty, freedom, our Constitution, Bill of Rights, and limited government, while speaking against corporate and government corruption, tyranny, and the globalist Great Reset agenda that undermines our precious American sovereignty. Discussions here are unscripted and free-flowing, so sometimes conversations wander off in unpredictable directions. Would you like to call in and share your thoughts and be part of the conversation? The number is 563-999-3698. Again, that is 563-999-3698. Press number 1 and you'll be added to the queue. Please also like and follow my Lucid Libertarian with Lori Ann page on Facebook. You can help me battle their freedom-loathing censorship by visiting my page regularly, along with reacting, commenting, and sharing my posts. Thank you so much for listening, but please sit tight and don't go anywhere. We'll be back in a few minutes to kick off the show.
Imagine waking up in a trunk. What is grooming? What if I told you we had a 40% increase of human and sex trafficking in our country due to COVID lockdowns? We already had high numbers to begin with. One's Purpose is an amazing organization pounding the pavement every day helping these survivors get help. Unfortunately, they do not have the funding they need for a safe house. In the state of Oregon, we have zero safe houses for these survivors who have endured the most heinous of crimes. The time is now to get involved. The time is now to help stop human trafficking. Please go to onespurpose.com to get involved. If you need help and if you know someone who needs to get help, please contact 541-221-3448. Make a donation. Make a difference.
It's Friday night, but that is no reason not to tune in to NWCR Radio at 9 p.m. Eastern Time with Robert the Infidel Garding. Being around since 2007, we patriots have watched as the left and many on the right have done nothing to stop what is going on to destroy our great nation. Ideas abound with our society, but most are horrible at best. But there are good ideas out there if you know where to look. Join us every Friday at 9 p.m. Eastern for a dose of reality from behind the silver microphone of freedom with the voice of reason in this unreasonable world. That's NWCR Radio at 9 p.m. Eastern Time on Friday evenings, where you can call in at 646-478-5284 and give your solutions to what is ailing this country.
Guns like a woman, son. It's all how you hold her.
that sits above the mantel on a couple rusty nails. Ain't worth a lot of money, and it damn sure ain't for sale. Good Lord only knows all the stories it could tell. My granddaddy's gun, he bought it new out of the Sears Roebuck catalog. It shot many shells over the back of an old bird dog. It backed the burglar down when Grandma took the safety off Granddaddy's gun. Just an old double barrel 12, stock is cracked and it kicks like hell. Wouldn't mean what it means to me, to no one. I can still hear his voice when I put it to my shoulder. It comes like a woman, son, it's all how you hold her. Taught me a whole lot more than how to hunt. One of these days I'll pass it on to my grandson, my granddaddy's gone. Turned 13 with a half shot box of shells and a kit to keep it clean. I keep a picture in the case of that sweet old man and me. Granddaddy's gun, just an old double barrel 12, stock is cracked and it kicks like hell. Wouldn't mean what it means to me, to no one. Put it to my shoulder. A gun's like a woman, son. It's all how you hold her. Taught me a whole lot more than how to hunt. One of these days I'll pass it on to my grandson, my granddaddy's gun. Couple rusty nails. It ain't worth a lot of money, and it damn sure ain't for sale.
Hey there! Are you hesitant to get the vaccine?
Yeah!
Then get the brand new government-approved Vaccinate Me Elmo doll.
Wow! Elmo loves experimental vaccines!
With the Vaccinate Me Elmo doll, your kid will finally feel the pressure and shame we've successfully made you feel to get the COVID vaccine.
Quick! Give me the vaccine! Elmo don't want to be responsible for the deaths of friends or family! Thanks! Ha! Now Elmo's a good person!
The Vaccinate Me Elmo doll comes with a toy syringe, a stethoscope.
Elmo, your heart is beating fast. Are you having complications?
Of course not!
And a tiny vial of something. It's not the vaccine, promise. It's, water. Let your kid drink it.
Elmo, can't you take your mask off now?
No! Gotta keep that mask on forever!
That feels like mixed messaging.
With the Vaccinate Me Elmo doll, your child will be begging you to get the vaccine. Just scared out of their little mind for the fate of the world or your money back.
It's your turn. Time to get the vaccine.
You want to.
Sorry, you have to.
No.
Do it.
No.
You have no choice.
No.
Now. Now. Or else.
Or else what?
Last chance.
Okay.
Great!
for all you anti-science conspiracy believing parents by the re-released classic Tickle Me Elmo. It's perfectly normal.
Now this is fun.
Get the vaccine or die.
Buy the Vaccinate Me Elmo doll today. It's required by the CDC.
The Babylon Bee Guide to Wokeness will teach you everything you need to know about how to choose your pronouns,
how to blame everyone else for your problems,
how to show the world just how wonderful you are,
the art of virtue signaling,
the basis of race, gender, and intersectionality,
the truth about American history,
problematic books,
and how to tell if a baby is racist.
I do. I care about future generations. I care about things. I want to do a song right now. I actually wrote this in April, and I'm going to keep singing it for a while because it makes me feel good. And so let's do it.
Hi, everybody. Gather around. I'm here to give you anything you like. You want free college, energy, mortgages, whatever you like. You have come to the right place. Why? I'll tell you why. Who can take your money?
Who can take your money?
With a twinkle in their eye.
A twinkle in their eye.
Take it all away and give it to some other guy. The government. The government can. Who can tax the sunrise? Who can tax the trees?
Who can tax the trees?
Let you run a business and collect up all the fees. The government.
The government.
Oh, the government can.
The government can.
And the government can, cause they mix it up with lies and make it all taste good. Just throw away the Constitution. I wrote that, thank you. Who can give a bailout?
Tell us to behave.
And make the founding fathers roll over in their grave. I don't care if you hate me, I'm gonna sing it anyway. Oh, the government can. And the government can. Cause it mixes it up with lies and make it all yummy, 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 yummy. Everything we make, they're all power hungry and malicious. Their economics are fictitious. Soon we'll have to eat our dishes. Chicken, how's that taste, kids?
Delicious.
Who can be a failure?
Who can be a failure?
In so many ways.
In so many ways.
And instead of getting fired, hey, we'll give ourselves a raise. Kentucky, you know what I'm talking about. Oh, the government can. And the government can go to mix it up with lies. I did the choreography myself. And your Uncle Sam can, cause he mixes it with lies and makes himself look good. And I feel so good, cause the government says I should.
Well, hello, hello, all of you liberty and freedom-loving people out there. Thank you for finding your way here to the Lucid Libertarian with Lorianne show. This is, of course, your host, Lorianne. Lots of stuff to talk about, and, of course, I have my sense of humor there. Of course, I played Aaron Lewis, Granddaddy's Gun. That is a tribute to Gunslinger, because Gunslinger was like the first person to show up in the chat room and on the switchboard. So shout out to Gunslinger. I played that song for him. And then, of course, one of my favorite spoof things is the Vaccinate Me Elmo doll. It's something that, you know, we are in the holiday season, right? Everybody's wondering what to buy their kids for Christmas. Well, me Elmo doll definitely comes to mind, especially because, you know, they got to push the
the latest booster shot, you know, the latest, you know, booster, kill your kid shot, kill your, you know, kill yourself shot if you take it. Anyway, and then, of course, that was the last thing you heard was Tim Hawkins, the government can. That's just too good. I played it last week, but I had to play it again this week. It might be a weird thing, so just fair warning. And, of course, Valerie's ready to go here, too. But before we bring her into the conversation, possible topics, again, I could have added more to it, but there's a limited number, you know, amount of space in the show description. But to kick things off, of course, there was the third GOP debate that was this past week. I'm sure there's a lot to talk about there. I have so many comments on that, it's not even funny. Which, by the way, did anybody miss Pence not being there? You know, because Pence dropped out. Did anybody miss him? I sure didn't. And then in other news, 56.6% of Ohio voters amend their constitution to protect abortion, a.k.a. reproductive rights. So we can get into that if we'd like tonight. There were election problems being reported in Pennsylvania, Kentucky, Mississippi. And so this is kind of, to me, sounding like a not only like a Groundhog Day, but also a taste of more to come, repeat. So, you know, if you know, there was voting machine issues, ballot issues, things like that. So we can get into more of that later as well. Washington election officials closed, or election offices, sorry, closed after fentanyl was found in envelopes, and there were several other election offices in various states that were sent suspicious envelopes as well. So somebody out there is wanting to poison people with fentanyl and disrupt elections that way. That's new. In other news, the Biden Energy Department is requesting to purchase 3 million barrels of oil to finally start replenishing the stockpiles that he released. I believe it's something like we only have like 40% of our stockpiles and reserves after he looted it a couple of years ago. But the thing is right at, they're wanting to buy it at $79 a barrel. That's pretty expensive, especially when Trump had purchased it, what was it, like around $24 a barrel, I think, when Trump had to, you know, to get all of our stockpiles all full. And so that's quite a price markup to start doing that now, which, of course, we saw that coming. I thought the Democrats were supposed to be anti-oil. Well, you know, oil companies are going to be making some money off of that deal, aren't they? Then also, interesting story, New Jersey is being sued over creepy baby blood database. So, yeah, we need to get into that a little bit later, too. So they're keeping this database of DNA, blood, you know, from when babies are born, and they take their blood samples and they DNA test it, and they've been keeping a database on all of these babies. So that's kind of creepy. And this is, of course, without the knowledge of the parents, without consent, all done, you know, secretly. And so that story broke out. I couldn't help but notice that. That might be something that we'd go into further later tonight. Then also in news of the weird, MICA, M-I-K-A, MICA becomes the world's first AI human-like robot CEO. So here we go, folks. Terminator, I think, is definitely in the works with this. So they're putting an AI human-like robot in charge of a company. What could possibly go wrong? Then also a new study came out finding that there are billions of residual DNA in a single dose of COVID-19 mRNA shot. And at the same time, Pfizer's profits have plummeted, which that's good news. So these things are coming out. People are starting to get more and more aware of what is really in those clot shots. And, you know, remember all of the hype that, no, this is only mRNA. Only that doesn't affect the DNA. It has nothing to do with your DNA. Don't worry. But here we go. We're finding residual DNA in this study on a single dose. So, you know, the more you take it, the more this foreign residual DNA is being found in it. That's also pretty creepy. Then in other news, Paul Pelosi, his attacker, the trial has begun this past week. I haven't really been keeping up too much on it, but I did notice the trial did start. And, of course, almost, you know, not a whole lot of people are talking about it. And definitely lots and lots of stuff to discuss. So, yeah, that's what I started out with. And I did present Valerie with a couple of things that I wanted to mention as well earlier that I saw just today in the news. Libertarians out there, you should be really, really proud. You should be really, really happy. You should be celebrating because the QAnon shaman, Jacob Chansley, is running for Congress as a Libertarian to represent Arizona. So that should be interesting. You know, and just for entertainment purposes, I kind of hope he wins. So, yeah, Jacob Chansley, who became known as the QAnon shaman, who wore a fur-horned hat and face paint when he entered the U.S. Capitol during the January 6th riot, has filed paperwork to run for Arizona's 8th congressional district as a Libertarian. He filed the paperwork late last week for the 2024 election. He was released from prison into a halfway house in March after being arrested in January 2021 and sentenced in November 2021 to 41 months in prison after he pled guilty to obstructing an official proceeding. Chansley, who also goes by the name J.M. July, was released from the halfway house in May. So I guess, you know, it's pretty appropriate and pretty fitting that if the QAnon shaman's going to run for Congress, you would do so as a Libertarian, right? So I kind of found that a little bit humorous. But, yeah, I think just for – I would actually like to see him win. I would like to see what he'd actually do. Valerie, are you there? And any comments on that or anything else so far?
Yes, I am here. I think it would be hilarious.
Hello.
Hello. I think it would be great if he won. I think it is. We need somebody to shake things up, quite frankly, and I am absolutely sick of these career politicians who think they know better, and I hope he wins.
Me too. I just think that would be hilarious. I want more colorful people like that. I mean, they can't do any worse than the jokers that are already in office, you know, these stuffed shirts that are clowns themselves. You know, I think I am less fearful of QAnon shaman being in Congress than I am of some of, you know, most of the current Congress members, really, you know. They're destroying this country left and right. They're failing the people left and right. And, you know, maybe somebody like QAnon shaman that has prison for just simply being there, you know, and somebody that's been outed like that, high profile like that, definitely would shake things up. I like the way you put that.
Well, he also shows that he's willing to – he would do what a lot of people aren't. You know, a lot of people wouldn't have, they're afraid of the consequences instead of taking a stand for what they believe in, or they're easily swayed to go along with things or just you know, oh, it's not affecting me, I don't need to worry about it. And no, he did something about his beliefs. And he wasn't violent when he was in there. He was definitely passionate. I don't necessarily know if I agree with him on, I don't know what all he believes, but you know what? We need a few more red-blooded Americans in that office instead of people that are just bleeding money.
Exactly. And people that are just there to, you know, profit off of their position, which is obviously what they do. You know, they get in there and then within like 4 years, they're multimillionaires, and it's like, okay, you know, no corruption to be concerned about there, right?
Yeah, no, not at all. Not even a little bit. They're all angels.
They sure are. Especially like Pelosi. You know, why that woman doesn't just retire? I don't, you know what I mean? And she should have gone away a long time ago. I can't remember. I don't think that she's defying in the trial, but I think that they did want something from her. I'll have to look again. It's been a while since I saw the story about it. I have to do some digging. While I do some digging on some of these other topics, I'm going to go ahead and bring Gunslinger and Mike into the fold here. Gunslinger, you are on. Mike, you are on as well. Welcome to the show. Happy Sunday. Hope everything is going well with you guys.
Mm-hmm. It's a going. It's a going like the Energizer Bunny. To where? Oh, hell, that's it. I mean, yeah, especially this country. You know, especially speaking about Piglosi, I like to call her Piglosi because he looks like a pig. Grim Reaper, line one, Piglosi, pick it up. About your time. Just like Frankenstein out there in California. Yep. Grim Reaper's on line one on that one, too.
Usually, Laurie, what you got is in this Congress, you got pre-cons. This guy, this Joseph Chansley, will be the first ex-con to be, in Congress. Everybody else is a pre-convict. You know, that's what they are. They're pre-con.
Good point.
You know?
Well,
they – go ahead.
Go ahead. No, go ahead. Keep going.
I mean, these people – like you said, they go in, middle-class people, and they go, maybe middle-class people, and they go come out multimillionaires. And in the case of Joe Biden, well, he might come out a billionaire if he plays his cards right, his corrupt cards anyway, stealing from the bottom of the deck and taking cards from the sleeves of his coat, shirt, and all that crap, you know, all those illegal ways to play cards, right?
Look, the only card that Poopy Pants knows how to play is which fucking brands of Depends to wear diapers. That's the only card he knows. Okay. Because that's all he does. Come on, really? You know, what do you think we call him, Poopy Pants Biden? There you have. Pretty simple, isn't it?
Poopy Pants.
Poopy Pants. Yeah, that's right.
Poopy Pants.
Yep.
There's a clip of, what's his name? Al Roker, that he said, you know what, I pooped my pants, and he said it on the air, he actually said it, you know, so that was Al Roker, but anyway, pants.
I'm going to go ahead and bring Boyd into the fold here as well, guys, to join the party. Hey, Boyd, you are on.
Hi there.
Doing okay up there in Alaska? Are you snowed in? Have you been able to open up your front door?
Yeah. We're supposed to get another 6 to 12 inches here tonight. So, yeah, everything is going along just fine.
Do you have flood dogs up there? I mean, maybe that's a good investment for you.
Have what?
Sled dogs.
No, but I got two other dogs that I had to go bail out of jail yesterday because they walked over the fence and got out.
Oh. I know at one point you had a visiting moose there, right?
Yeah, in fact, I had one just about 15 minutes ago.
Oh, wow.
Cool. It was over here.
Cool. Well, yeah. Oh, he tends to have that happen to him a lot sometimes, Lorianne, getting a visiting moose.
Well, that's better than a pack of wolves.
Sounds like it's time to be moose burgers. Moose burgers?
I don't, my life is not long enough to be able to spend a life sentence in jail.
Right.
They don't hunt moose? I thought they hunted them.
Huh?
I thought they hunted moose.
They do, but they're not in season.
Oh.
And when they're not in season, you get a moose, and damn, you go to jail. I could kill Pelosi or any of those fools in D.C. and get less time.
Well, see, you know, that's proportionate to their value.
I was thinking the same thing. I just wasn't going to say it on the air.
Yeah.
Okay, so I shared this story. I think I talked about it maybe like late Friday on Robert's show, Conservative Nation Media, but I think it wasn't recorded. I think that might have been when I brought it up, but I'm not sure. But I had to laugh at this story, and I shared it with Valerie a couple of days ago. A pilot accused of trying to crash Horizon plane over Oregon says he thought he was dreaming or dead. This story is hilarious. Is this real? Joseph Emerson kept asking. While being held in a detention room at Portland International Airport, the Alaska Airlines pilot said he stripped off his clothes and urinated on himself, hoping this would wake him up, but it didn't work. He was already awake. Earlier in the day on October 22nd, while off duty and flying in the cockpit jump seat of a Horizon Air flight from Washington State to San Francisco, Emerson had attempted to shut down the plane's engines. The crew managed to stop him, declaring an emergency, and redirected the plane to Portland, where police arrested Emerson shortly after 6 p.m., In an interview with the New York Times, Emerson has now opened up about his state of mind as he was in the cockpit jump seat and how it led him to facing 83 counts of attempted murder in Oregon State Court. Emerson was returning that October day from a gathering to honor a close friend who had died unexpectedly 5 years ago. In the interview, he appeared to blame his actions aboard the plane on the lingering effects of taking psychedelic mushrooms at the gathering. Emerson became paranoid, convinced his friends were making fun of him. He felt fearful of them, he said. But then he became concerned that what he was experiencing wasn't real, that he was dreaming. He found himself reliving the most traumatic, shameful moments of his life, he told the Times. Am I dead? Is this hell? He said, and he wondered. Emerson arrived at Everett, Washington Airport on Sunday, October 22nd. Court records indicate He said he took the magic mushrooms about 48 hours before the flight. The Time story says he ate a bit of mushrooms around a fire with friends on the Friday night before the flight. As he went through airport security and continued onto the plane that was supposed to take him to California, or take him home to California, he said nothing made sense. He was disoriented, confused by mundane observations, he said. I just want to hold you, the 44-year-old pilot texted his wife as he settled into the cockpit jump seat of the Horizon Air Flight 2059, according to the Times. He also texted a friend that he was having a panic attack. Send love, he wrote. I need to be home. He still hasn't made it home. Instead, he remains in the county jail in downtown Portland. He told police that he had been battling depression for some time. The recent Washington Post investigation found that many pilots who struggle with their mental health do not seek help, fearing that it will result in their employer or the Federal Aviation Administration preventing them from flying for months. Well, especially if you take psychedelic mushrooms, then yeah. And yeah, the FAA is probably not going to want to let you fly anytime soon if you're taking magic mushrooms, getting all whacked out over it. I had to laugh at this story. I was just like, oh my God. So, yeah, so he was so paranoid that he, you know, urinated on himself and stripped naked. Oh, my God. Is this a dream? How do I know if this is a dream or not? I think I'll strip naked and pee on myself. Sounds like a great idea. Yeah.
Where did he do this? Where was the bathroom he was in?
He was not in the bathroom as far as the story. It doesn't indicate he was in the bathroom. He urinated on himself. He was in the jump seat in the cockpit. And then he attempted to shut down the plane's engines. So apparently, if you think that you might be dreaming and stripping naked and urinating on yourself isn't enough to wake you up, then the next thing you should do is try to shut down the plane's engines. And then maybe that'll wake you up. It's like,
this guy's an idiot.
I don't want to ever get on a plane again.
I mean, if he knew he was struggling with whatever mental health issues he had, I hate that phrase, mental health issues, but if he knew he was struggling ahead of time, he knew that he had consumed these mushrooms prior, the guy had absolutely no business walking on that plane, and as far as I'm concerned, absolutely deserves to be prosecuted. He jeopardized every single person's life that was on that plane, and oh my goodness, wow.
I like to say that they let any idiot on a plane, but, well, look at the president, or so-called president, right? And this guy is dangerous, but the president is more dangerous. But anyway, yeah, this guy is out there, and he's using psychedelic mushroom. I myself like mushrooms, but I like the regular kind that I can put in, like, spaghetti sauce and you know, stuff like that. Maybe a few here and there on a salad or something like that, or, you know, that type
it's
of
so,
stuff.
So
well,
boring.
You could make your spaghetti so much more fun if you put psychedelic mushrooms in there instead.
Yeah, all kinds of flavors and colors and all kinds of stuff. Well, hell yeah, why not? Yeah, but you know,
those spaghetti noodles will be like Medusa. You'll have your meatball, and then the spaghetti noodles will be Medusa. If you look, you know, people look at it, they'll turn to stone. Like,
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. Well, you know, after this, the FAA doesn't pull his license. He ain't going to fly again. No, he ain't going to fly again. So he won't even be able to get on an airplane again. You know, they take that stuff pretty seriously. When you try to shut down an airplane's engine with full of people, yeah, they take that pretty seriously. Yeah. Geez, what a nutcase.
Yeah, how would you like to be on that jury? You know, he tries to plead not guilty due to temporary insanity or something. How'd you like to be on that jury?
Oh, I just forgot. What did that do? Did it shut down the engines? Wow. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Well, wait, you said they had 83 on that plane along with him?
Oh, 83 charges. He's facing 83 charges.
83 people.
One for each person on the airplane.
Yeah,
that's
for
what
each.
I'm saying.
Yep.
So 83. Wow. I mean, he's not too far behind Trump.
Well, no, not really. But you know,
Trump really. But I'm just saying, in terms of charges, 83. I mean, 83 is that's a small. That's a DC-9 or something like that.
Wouldn't be a very big plane because it's kind of like a commuter plane almost, you know, because it's only going from Washington to San Francisco. So those planes, you know, thankfully.
Right, and it's this guy pissing on himself to see if he's awake. Okay, those cockpits are supposed to be clean as a whistle. That's another danger. You know, those things are supposed to be clean. To have those computers and such work right, they're supposed to be clean as a whistle. And he's pissing on himself, pissing all over the floor.
Computers are not. They're not located on the floor. They're, unless he whipped it out and pissed it all over. It's all over the instrument panel. Now, that might cause a little bit, but that's not going to completely shut down the flying situation of the airplane. It's going to stink
like
hell.
Yeah, at least he only pissed on himself. You know, he didn't piss all over the instrument panel. Yeah, so, you know, to his credit.
I see Nathan
is in the switchboard raising his hand, so I'm going to bring Nathan on into the fold here as well. Hello, Nathan. Welcome to the party.
Hey, that guy flying the plane. That guy flying the plane reminded me of the guy that said, "I'm not schizophrenic, and neither am I." anyway, hey, you know, on the politics, the politicians in D.C. and all over the place, really. Have you noticed that Biden's been doing what he's been doing for most of our life, according to how old we are, over some of our lives? He's been doing this same stuff, and now we got this guy Mike Johnson in there. He sounds pretty impressive. I've heard him actually say stuff that's in the Constitution as it's written, so I'm almost impressed with him, but he's been up there since 2015, and we've never heard him. We haven't heard him out front doing his – you know, get us excited rant, and it's just we're got an election coming up right now, so we start putting the right people out front, and I was thinking about it. I remember we did the same thing with the Tea Party, got tired of Obama winning on every point. The Republicans jumped out in front of the Tea Party, and then they got reelected. They got a majority, and they voted 100-0 to fund Obamacare. So, you know, I'm having a hard time getting excited about this. And somebody mentioned we got three cons, ex-cons, if they're still ex, they've never been cleared. They're still cons. Yet we fear what it would be like to put Trump up there if he's convicted. You know, that I don't, but, you know, I'm hearing some people say, well, if he's convicted of his charges, I don't know if I could trust him as a president. You know, and yet you're seeing them make this stuff up as we go. And it's like, oh, please, people, think we're in trouble.
We're in trouble. And I've said it before, Nathan, they changed the rules. The rules used to be that you don't go after your political opponents the way they're going after Trump. That was the rules. They've changed the rules. Everybody knows everything. All these cases are bullshit. Everybody knows it. All right? Everybody knows it, that all of these cases are bullshit and political and stuff. That's why every time they indict the man, his poll numbers go up. And his poll numbers and probably his internals, the internal polls that they do, which are the more important polls, they go up every time they do this shit to him. I mean, they went up after he got indicted in Colorado, after they took him to court in Colorado, you know, trying to get him off, trying to do an unconstitutional move and getting him off the ballot, you know, in Colorado. So, yeah, every time the regular American public are seeing this shit for what it is, and it is shit. It's not particularly good shit. It's not the shit that you want to put on your crops. No, it's not that. But anyway, yeah, it's bullshit, and everybody knows it. So we'll see what happens with these cases. I mean, particularly this asshole in New York who keeps saying, well, Trump, that Mar-a-Lago isn't worth what Trump says it's worth. You know, it's bullshit. You know? It's bullshit. You know, go ahead, Nathan. Go ahead, guys.
No, well, yeah, no, I'm agreeing with you. I just, it's like I've seen so much of, and I go look, try to get the actual vote record to what they say, and I've seen so much of that it's like, you know, the people, our problem is we don't have people out here that are challenging us to think, and you know where we disagree. Here, look, here's the way I see it. Go show me that I'm wrong. We don't have that. What we have is we got these cheerleaders jumping in front of us, yelling rah 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 rah. We buy it. We're buying it. You know, our team has lost 100%, but one more time we got to get excited because we're going to win next time. And it's like we have such a short-term memory. You know, the Newt Gingrich thing in 94 got a majority in both houses, and no one paid attention. After they had the first promise was, and this really bothers me, the first promise is we're going to pass a law that the Congress has to live by the same laws the people do. Where did they ever get the idea they're above the law anyway? But they didn't have enough numbers to pass it. Same with everything. All I say is go find the 10 bills and the 8 promises and show me which ones they passed. They got us in a short-term memory. We go from one election to the next, scared that the Democrats are going to get the majority, and even if they do or don't, we see them get away with everything, and then we don't get excited until right before the election. And I've been listening to this guy, Mike Johnson, and I've heard him actually quote what the Constitution says, and it's what's there. And I'm like, man, I'm impressed with this guy. But he's been up there to 2015, and we're just now seeing him. We're just now getting to hear him out, standing out front. Yeah. So they just brought him up to win the people's heart. And I won't be voting for any Republicans.
Well, yeah, but you got to understand that fucking McCarthy had worked forever to get to be the Speaker of the House, only have it ripped away, and Johnson, who, by the way, is from Louisiana, but not that it matters, but he was really a backbencher, you know. He
yeah.
was a wide guy. He was before he was in Congress, he was working with President Trump, you know, in terms of, you know, against the election and all that stuff, on his team to help him get elected and stuff in 2015, and he went to other places before he got elected to Congress, you know. So he was doing other things before he got elected before that. So it's like, yeah, he's a backbencher, and he's saying the right things right now. And he's not a multimillionaire. That's another thing. He's not one of these guys. McCarthy's a rich son of a bitch, you know. All these Pelosi, rich, you know. Paul Ryan, rich, you know. All these guys who have been speakers of the House. Not that it matters. I'm just saying. They were rich before, and they're rich now, you know. So, I mean, they're all convicts in my mind.
One of the things that I would like to see happen is for there to be a limit on the amount that people are able to spend on campaigning, and not just like a, $2 million limit, but something drastically lower to where you could actually have everyday people run. I mean, you lower that to, say, $20,000. You can't spend more than $20,000 on your campaign. You can't accept donations from any major companies. It all has to be individuals. Then all of a sudden, you're going to start leveling the playing field, and you're going to be able to get everyday people that know. I mean, look at just listening to you guys, everyday people that know the Constitution, know the history of this country, know more than probably the majority of the politicians we currently have sitting in Congress. When you start getting everyday people back in those seats, then you're actually going to start having a government that is representative of the people. Because right now it's just all about who can outspend the other person, who knows the right people, this, that, and the other. We need to start getting it back to being the people's house. And until you remove the money, you're not going to get it.
Well, they came up with that complaint. I think it was McCain. I might be mistaken on this, but Feingold or something like that. They came up with reforming it to get all the money out. So what they did is, so I can only, now you're running for office, I'm only allowed to donate no more than a dollar. But we got this other private group over here, this PAC, that I can just give them as many dollars as I want, and then they give you, they funnel it through these private organizations like these, you know, and that put more money in politics to the politicians than it did getting, you know, slowing the money down. So they actually made more money by doing that campaign finance reform. And so, you know, they're smarter than us. They really are smarter politicians than us. And they always got an angle to beat us, to come make it look like we did something, but they didn't. We're just, you know, it's like the, you know, I remember Newt Gingrich out there during Trump's time, out there going on interviews, taking spears for, you know, the good job that Trump's doing. But everything that Trump was repealing was from that 1994 contract with America that, it just blows my mind. I've seen it.
I'm bringing Joe Gibson
motion
into the discussion here. Sorry to interrupt, but Joe Gibson, you're on. Sorry, Valerie, go ahead.
No, it's okay. I was just going to touch on one of the, you know, he mentioned the campaign finance reform and stuff. You know, and yes, there's ways to work around how people can contribute. That's why if you cap the amount, the total amount that they can even have, or they can even spend on their campaign, then let's say you do have them running through PACs or whatever the case may be, everybody's on the same playing field. everybody can't, I mean, you don't have people spending millions of dollars on TV ads and radio and mailers and all of this other stuff. It gets it back to being about the people. It levels the playing field, but it has to be a cap on the amount that they can spend on their entire campaign. I mean, it would definitely get people door-to-door more. They'd be having more personal interactions because right now they can just, you know, they get the support of the local party or they get ads paid for and they show up in people's mailboxes, but nobody knows anything about them other than the fact that, oh, they're a Democrat, I'm a Democrat, or I'm a Republican, they're Republican. Other thing I think they should do is get rid of the party affiliation by their names. Just remove the party completely, and then people have to actually run on their own merits, not their party base, and then people have to vote based on that person's beliefs, what they stand for, what they've said, and not just voting along party lines. I mean, not that any of that's ever going to happen, but...
That might be a bad idea.
I agree with you 100%.
Well, that might be a bad idea because at one point here in Louisiana, we didn't have the party. We just had numbers, okay? We had, you know, I'd be a number one, whoever would be a number 10 or number 12 or whatever. And they said, vote number 12 in the next election or vote number 16 or number 22 or whatever it was. And we weren't voting by party or name. We were voting by number. You know.
So, well, get rid of the number thing.
I would like to also see reforms in local elections. It's ridiculous, you know, if you're running for a local office, you know, in order to qualify, you have to get, you know, so much in donations, and you have to so much money, you know, X amount of dollars. Not only in these large elections or national elections, it's at the local level as well that needs to be reformed to go, no, you know, you know, if you want, you know, somebody that actually is truly grassroots to be on the ballot to vote for, you know, then why is there such a high cost involved? Why are there all these requirements with donations and how much you spend on ads and how much you spend on your campaign in order to qualify? I think it's ridiculous.
And if the Republicans on high endorse you, you're in.
Well, that was a big deal in that debate. One of the things that Ramaswamy talked about was what was happening with Rona McDaniel, you know, and how she's a power player, all right? If she says you get the money to – if she says the candidate gets the money, the candidate gets the money. If she says the candidate doesn't get the money, the candidate isn't going to get the money, right? So the RNC –
No, that's not how it works. That's not how it works. The nominee, the person that's nominated,
gets the money. Yes, it does, because – Joe, this is how
you can't give everyone the money. I know how it works. The person that's nominated is allocated the funds, okay, depending upon which state you're in and what the Board of Elections campaign finance rules and laws are. Every state's different, but you're talking about the Daniel woman there. The money that she's giving will be to the Republican nominee. That's the person that will get the money. She can't give
that's
it all out to
saying,
all runners.
What I'm saying this, Joe, is this. The President of the United States, or if you want to say Trump, is should be the de facto leader of the party, all right? If he decides to endorse Joe Gibson for the House seat, and he endorses you, then that's where Joe Gibson should get that money.
Why he's not the committee? He's not part of the national committee leader. He's not in charge of the party. Why should Trump have any say-so?
There's a number of candidates that Trump, who is a, as the leader of the party, generally says
he's not the leader though. He's not the leader of the party though. He's not the national committee. He's not the leader.
But anyway,
he's the front runner. He's the front runner, but he's not the leader.
But he's a lot of these guys. Look, here's the deal. A lot of these guys, there was a number of guys that he endorsed that won, that ended up getting the money and winning the thing. But there was a number, almost a greater number that didn't get the money. And because they didn't get the money, they didn't win. And it's, that's all on Ronald McDaniel. Ronald McDaniel is a crook. She's an establishment hack, and she's a crook.
Well, I don't know her too well. I don't know too much about her, but as far as the money thing goes, I don't know. I don't understand your point. I mean, but as far as the – I just don't get it. I don't understand what you're trying to get at here. I mean, who's in – there's a person that's
I'm bringing Bianchi in on this conversation.
Whoever's in charge of the party.
Bianchi's in the house.
I think that's a lot. That's actually kind of a dangerous slope to go on. If you're to have one person, a leader of a party – deciding who's going to get the money for whatever area and running and being the candidate, then that's coming from a top down instead of a bottom up. And this country is supposed to be bottom up. Otherwise, you're
giving
way too much.
Yeah, but somebody has to be in charge.
Well, yeah,
you know?
I mean,
right.
So, but not necessarily
that's the way
of
it
a.
Is.
I mean, when you've got obviously you've got a president that's going to be making, you know, they fill their role as a president. But when you have a single person leading a party, they should not be the end-all say-so when it comes to who is going to be getting the nomination of a party in various districts and everything, because that decision needs to come from the people, not the person at the top. That is way too – I mean, we're all supposed to be about smaller government, about the people, not any one person.
But the people put that person in charge. That's what I'm trying to say.
That person, no one person should be in charge of an entire party and making decisions
as far as who's going to be in any place.
She was appointed by the representatives of that party, of the selection committee. There has to be a chairperson. There has to be a chairperson that's in charge. There can't be everybody's in charge and everybody gets to have a say. I agree with you as far as there shouldn't be no parties anyway. But the point of being though, if there is a party and the people that are a member of that party selected her to be the chairman of that party, then that chairman of the party gets to allocate the funds where that person gets to, you know, where they have to go, you know, by the vote.
Well, let me tell you what goes on when Obama shows up in St. Louis. And speaking at a campaign rally for Cori Bush, and he's speaking on behalf of Cori Bush. Well, he can allocate money from the DNC toward her campaign because he's the head of the Democratic Party at that period of time.
Yeah,
that's how that stuff works.
Yeah, that's how it works exactly.
And that's
how it works. I think it's dangerous.
When he goes to these places and he brings these people up on stage, that they're not elected yet, but they're running. They're running, and he says, "I support Mr. X." You know, they're not running. They're running, but they're not elected yet. "I support Mr. X," and if that Mr. X happens to, for instance, I give you Mr. X. Okay, Mr. X is down in the polls. Trump comes in there for the House of Representatives. Trump comes in there, supports him. Polls flip. He's up in the polls, and you're supposed to go by the polls. These politicians are supposed to go by the polls. Generally, they stick their thing in there and they go by the polls, and they got to get the money from someplace. Now, some of these guys. will try and get it from regular people like us, but usually that doesn't work. And it, but like I said, Trump, like Bianchi just said, Trump, what's his name, when he was the leader of the Democratic Party, the President Biden, when he was the leader, and he went campaign for Cori Bush, they gave Cori Bush the money, didn't they, on his campaign,
Not only that, other Democratic politicians out of their war chest can give that candidate money also.
Yeah.
That's right.
I mean, you know, it's not.
Just
I mean,
remove the party's ability
today.
To give candidates money. I don't think a party should be giving any candidates money, because then whoever is heading up the party or whoever's on the in-group is going to dictate who's going to be filling those seats and who's actually running. And, again, it becomes less about the people and all about who's kissing the right asses and has
the
money.
That's the point. That's the point of being a part of a party, though. You know? I mean, everyone has a choice to be an independent.
There is no parties in our political system.
Yeah, there shouldn't be any parties to begin with, but that's, you know, that's irrelevant. I mean, that's unconscious.
The
founding fathers didn't want parties.
But let's amend the Constitution. Let's amend the Constitution and put the two parties in it. That way we're not fussing about the parties, because there is no parties in the Constitution. It's about the people.
When you get elected, you're supposed to toe the party line, whether it's abortion or whatever. You never see a candidate that received money from the party or other members of the party is going to talk against the issues that that party stand for. Unfortunately, that's the way it works. Unless you go the other way, like the lady is saying, and you sponsor and fund that politician with little dollars. That can work, but it takes a lot of them.
And the people still have really the power when you think about it. I mean, the people can still reach in. The problem is the people are too, I don't know, as far as donors go and everything and donations go, the people can still donate to whoever they want. I mean, you know, the party's going to have a nominee. They're going to nominate someone, a front runner, and that's where the money is going to go. You know, I mean, that's just the way it is. And it goes at local, state, national, whatever. You know, you have your state committees, you have your national committees, you know, you have your local committees. So, I mean, that's the way it is. I mean, it's all done by committee. When you sponsor legislation, like if I'm elected and I have to form a committee to present legislation to the lawmakers if I want a bill sponsored. That's the way it goes. It has to go to committee first.
Right.
So
right. But then again, I give you an example. Back in the late 90s, we had a guy that was running for Congress, right? Not Congress, was going to run for the U.S. Senate, I believe, if I'm not mistaken. And he was running, and when he's getting traction, he asked the National Senatorial Campaign Committee for some money. They didn't give it to him.
Well, that's all politics within politics. I mean, you know, for us to say what's right, what's, you know, I mean, that's local politics. You know, I mean, we shouldn't have parties anyway, but we're not going to fix it like that. I mean, it doesn't matter.
Right.
I mean,
my feeling is that guy could have won, but that's just me. That's just me. I felt like that guy could have won, but that's just me, you know. That's just how I feel. I'm just one person. What can I do, you know?
I tell you another thing, I think everyone would agree on this. Foreigners should not be donating to political campaigns. No outside country, no outside corporation. They should not be donating to a political campaign in the United States.
No, they should, because they should not. You know, and really there should be no parties anyway, and there should be a cap on it also, because, you know, the rich always get to put their whoever they want in there. It is always about the money. Very rarely do people with no money get elected over the guy with all the money.
Mm-hmm.
And Bill, that's why we got to say, what does the Constitution say, and keep saying, let's go by this, rather, because we've made up stuff that we're living by. And, you know, the parties don't – the elections wasn't made for the parties. It was made for the people. And the people are never going to get hurt as long as the two organizations are running stuff.
Well,
so
we're not going
to
get hurt anyway.
Voting.
Yeah, we're not going to get hurt anyway because we already went over this a million times anyway, because we're not really under the Constitution. We're a corporation. It's a de facto corporation, and municipalities run everything. And until we get a grip on that and understand the facts of that, we're not going to be able to fix anything anyway, because they all violate
the
oath of their office anyway.
And the politician ain't going to get behind that effort.
Very few will.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Very few will. But that's the thing. I mean, look, we're saying illegal campaign donation. Oh, let's go back to Bill. Well, I mean, Bill Clinton with fucking Charlie Tree and all that shit. That all these people that were staying in a Lincoln bedroom and all that shit during that time and having these fucking coffees and all that shit, you know. It's like, and don't, I mean, look, all this illegal, all this corruption that Biden's in is all about getting money for him to get elected. That's all this is, you know.
Biden, Trump, it's you know, one guy's holding up both puppets, like that commercial says. All that's a game, man. It's all a sideshow. You know, it's all ridiculous nonsense. Like I said, we have to start locally, grassroots, local, and branch out from there. That's national. To take on a national issue and fix it from the top down, it's not going to work.
Right. And that's the other thing. I mean, look. Why would they – everybody keeps going, well, let's get them with term limits. Why would they vote for term limits?
Well, some people have term limits. There are term limits in some states. In my state, we have term limits on some offices.
Well, I'm talking about these people in the Congress and the Senate.
They
you
ran
know,
on it in 94.
Right.
And didn't have enough numbers with two majority in both houses. So,
yeah.
You know.
Well, that's up to the people, too, man. I mean, common sense. Look at Biden. For over 50 years now in public office. That right there, everyone should agree on. He's been there too long. You know, what the hell is he doing as president? You know, it's come on.
I actually don't
crazy.
Know if I agree. I don't know if I agree with term limits. The reason being is because if there's somebody in there that it's supposed to be about who the people want. So if somebody wants a person, if the people want a person in office for 20 years, let them have them in office for 20
years. That's dangerous.
I think,
that's
well,
dangerous.
I think the reason that it is dangerous, the reason that we have the issues we do now isn't because of a lack of term limits. It's because of the funding. Remove the funding. Put everybody on the level playing field, and I think you will get a more accurate representation of who the people truly want in office. And at that
election
point,
should be.
I mean, I think that if people want someone in there for 20 years, great. I think the problem, like I said, the problem that we're running into now is that nobody can compete with them.
Listen to what you just said, but hang on. Listen to what you said. The people want the majority. If the majority of the people want, we're a republic. The minority will always be crushed then. That if we, you know, if the majority, because you can convince a majority to take away the rights of a minority, you know, so that's dangerous. That's why we have a system set up the way we do.
Did I say majority?
Well, the majority would, that's what the people want. If the majority of the people want it, that's what's going to happen.
Well, that's
you know,
how anything
I mean,
happens within our voting system, is if the people
no.
vote for anything, then that's what happens.
Well, one of the convention states proposals I've seen is that a congressperson serve no longer than 9 terms, 18 years, a U.S. senator no longer than 4 terms, 24 years. Now, if you can't get done what needs to be done in that length of time, I don't know what to say.
I agree.
And also, federal officials, period, in the State Department, in the all of them, the defense, they serve no longer than 24 years, and they got to go.
Yeah, because common sense.
States,
you know, common sense, states, you know, yeah.
States should pay the salary. Louisiana should pay for Kennedy's salary. Illinois should pay for Bobby Rush's salary. Rather than they going up to Washington, D.C., getting in that big pool, then they raise their salary and all kinds of – you don't have no transparency. You can't ask one of those congresspersons from D.C. how much are they making and take a look at their income tax. You can't do it. But if they was being paid by the state, it would be more transparency and more control.
Well, here's the deal. Here's the deal, though, with term limits. We're supposed to have term limits here in Louisiana for the legislature, right? But what they do is, I think it's every 6 years for the House and every 8 years or something for the Senate, right? But what they do after they serve that term, that specific amount of time, they switch from one place to the other.
Well, let me ask everybody this question then. Everybody, I mean, is everyone supporting someone in their state or district, grassroots some person? Is everyone doing that?
Yep.
Look, here's the problem. Wait a minute. The whole problem is with the term limits. You got to have term limits. Because look, if we don't have term limits right now except for the president, okay? Now look at Pelosi and MaxiPad and Frankenstein and all these jackoffs. They've been in them offices since Methuselah walked the face of this freaking planet. Back when the dinosaurs were farting, okay? That's how long these people have been in these offices. The founding father did not intend for these people to serve their entire fucking life in those offices.
Elections should be term limits.
Yeah.
Well, here's the thing, the founding fathers didn't say anything. I mean, they didn't put anything in there about term limit. They knew that it was a possibility. I mean, look at how long they wanted George Washington to be president. I mean, it's one of those things that I...
term limits.
Yeah, but here's the thing is they wanted him to continue, and he's the reason that he didn't. So I can't imagine that they didn't consider how long somebody would be in office. I think they were more focused on what is it that the people want. If this is supposed to be truly representative of the people, then the people need to be able to have a say in how long that person is there, not some arbitrary rule. I think the biggest issue, again, that we run into is the funding. They stay in office because of the money.
No, actually, hang on. Go ahead.
Why is it that we have presidential term limits? One person, right? FDR. All right?
Well,
after what? 18 years or whatever the hell he was in there for presidency, for his president. Well, he didn't serve all that time, but yeah, you get the point. After that, his own party came up and said, no, we don't want presidents to serve 18
years. They did address
term limits. Yep.
They did address many, many times. Matter of fact, a couple quotes right here. Jefferson said, whenever a man has cast a longing eye on offices, a rotten begins in this conduct. You know, the founding fathers deliberated over the blueprints of term limits, and they believed anyone given power in government would eventually be corrupted by it. So that's why they addressed
it.
And you know.
That's right. You're right. Absolutely. You can't have these people in here and give them that kind of power because their head gets as big or bigger than the state of freaking Texas. And
yeah,
Texas is pretty goddamn.
George Mason stated.
You cannot have this. You have these people. Look at Blowjob. Blowjob Clinton. They went in there basically piss poor. Yeah, he was governor. Arkansas, sure, okay, corrupt, drug running and all this shit. He came out multimillionaire. They all do. You think you can't have that? Where do you think that money came from? Underhanded bribes, you know, contracts, you know, all this shit. I know. I'm a businessman. I ran my own business for 10 and a half fucking years. I know how these fuckers think. Okay?
Yeah, you're right. That's what Trump was saying.
Because it's natural, it's human behavior to grab all they can grab. You've done it, I've done it, we've all done it. Okay, even Trump's done it. Good God, nobody's perfect. But you keep these people in there, and they just keep amassing and amassing and amassing fucking money.
Yeah.
Under traders, all kinds of shit that goes on.
Yeah,
you don't think it does? Bullshit.
In St. Louis, they had three aldermen that went to jail being bribed by Mid-Easterner store owners, and guess what they was taking? Used damn cars. $1,500 used damn cars. Now, when I'm out, when we out getting people to sign the petition for a convention of state, you know what make them jump right on it? When we mention term limit. I'll give it here. I sign it.
Well,
exactly.
It
goes down to your local level, okay? Look how you're hearing it in the news all the time. Well, this councilman was indicted for taking too many blowjobs per month, and this one here was indicted for giving too many fucking blowjobs per month. You hear it all the time if you keep up with the news, okay? And that goes down to your local damn dog catcher. Plain and simple, man. It goes from the bottom all the way to the tippy poopy pants top. Bottoms in his.
Right. Think about this. We had, for a long time, we had a mayor here, white guy, Democrat, but white guy who was clean, and my little city flourished. We still have a white guy as a mayor. City's still flourishing, but everybody around us, get this now. Tell me if I'm not speaking it. Every mayor around this little town in my parish here in Louisiana is, guess what? Black. And guess what? Every one of them, every goddamn one of them has had brushes, I don't want to say brushes with the law, but you get the point. Something somewhere down the line has come out about these people that has either gotten them out of office or gotten them in trouble ethically, right? So, yeah, it's like corruption, what did he say, power corruption, absolute power corrupts absolutely or something like that? That's
absolutely
people,
it does. Absolutely,
the one that's still standing either has a lot of really strong integrity, or he's a professional crook and knows how to wipe up his fingerprints behind some of his dealings.
Oh yeah.
Well, they're trying to bankrupt Trump. All right.
Trump will be just fine.
Yeah.
He's got plenty of money.
It even affected me when I was young. When I was, you know, late teenager, I wanted to be a security officer and all this shit. I wanted to wear a uniform. I wanted to know what it was like to carry a gun. Well, I found out once I got there, no big deal.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like this. It's like these people. Even my head got a little bit big. Okay, you know, walk around with a fucking uniform, driving a goddamn squad car with fancy fucking lights on it, and stopping people all the goddamn time for doing this and doing that. Okay, when I was young, dumb and stupid and full of cum, okay, yeah, sure. But I'm older now. That shit don't mean anything to me now. Here, I still carry a gun for protection, of course, but not like it did when you're young. And it's the same goes with these people. They got in there when they were younger, obviously, you know, and stick the old hags that are in there now, and they've grown roots. If you ever garden, you know what roots are. Hell, they go pretty deep, okay? So they have to garden a lot. So these people have grown roots damn near to fucking hell. Why do you think they're so evil? Go ahead.
Yep. Do we have... Are we hearing somebody snoring
Who knows?
Or snorting while they're laughing. I don't know.
I see Sarge in the chat room, I think.
I'm in the chat room, but not unmuted. There is a Skype number that's kicking back listening, but hasn't pressed one, so isn't on the line yet. So
we're being
spied
on.
I mean, these people. I mean, when you have guys that in the office that get caught on fucking videotape with a bag full of cash. All right, or get caught going to their house to get fucking cash out of their freezer after a major disaster like Hurricane Katrina.
Mm.
That happened, guys. This guy named William Jefferson, who was a representative at the time. He had millions of dollars in cash in a goddamn freezer at his house that he took.
Why the freezer?
I don't know. That's just where the money was.
You got to thaw that.
He was taking bribes from Nigerians. Remember?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. And what made it even worse, he took a government fucking deuce and a half to go get that. Go get the cash. Because That's what was down at the time that the government was theming shit was, and the military was down there helping clean up after the hurricane, you know. So they had a bunch of deuces and a halves and all that shit. But he used the government vehicle to do it.
So,
and that's
Well, I just wanted to ask, you know. So, what do you think the solutions are to that? I mean, as far as fixing it. I mean, obviously, the subject here we're talking about is term limits, corruption with money.
Activism? Well, that guy ended up getting voted out. All right, so he's done and he's gone. And I think he served a little bit of time in jail as well.
Also, remember, you're forgetting one thing, too. Speaking of spending all this money and doing it from their own private stuff, remember, got to go back to blowjob Clinton again. Remember when he flew his daughter to California on Air Force One? Okay, for college? He flew Air Force One to take his daughter to college in California. You know how much it costs to run Air Force One? Hundreds of thousands of dollars an hour when that bird's in the air. It takes
$400,000 an hour.
It takes $50,000 just to turn the goddamn engines on. Okay? So, yeah, he flew his daughter all the way back to California.
It's his jet, though. You know, while he's the president, he can do what he wants with it. He gets access to that. He gets to live in the White House. That's what you get when you're elected. So, you know.
Well, what about poopy pants
but it's
flying his
for government
on
business, though? Not just to fly
to the government business.
You want to go for it. But it should be. You know, we shouldn't be paying just to go willy-nilly, you know, somewhere.
He lives in the White House, right?
Air Force One to be used for business purposes, not flying your daughter to college across the country.
Is there always business being conducted in the White House? He lives there. I mean, that's your life, you know. I mean, you get access to the limos. You get access to the jets. I mean, that's just what that's allocated for the president.
Again, why, how many times did Hunter fly on Air Force Two, you know?
Well, same amount as Trump, you know? Who cares?
Look how many times Butt Buddy took vacations on taxpayers' expense. Has anybody paid for your vacation on taxpayers' expense? No. No? Okay,
well,
so there it is right there.
Yeah, but taxes don't cover. Taxes don't pay for that. Anyway.
Look how many times Michelle and her mother flew all over the world. And Elijah Cummings in Baltimore let his daughter use his congressional place on her Uber car.
Yeah, that's what I'm telling you. It's easier to spend somebody else's money, isn't it? Tax money
should be spent. Not spending none of my money. That don't have any.
Don't get me started on Elijah Cummings. That's the asshole.
No such thing as money.
Elijah Cummings is the asshole that said you need a lawyer to read the bill, and he's talking about – he's a goddamn lawyer. He's talking about – he was talking about Obamacare at the time. You know?
Well, that – remember what Trump did. He refused the presidential salary every fucking year he was in there.
He donated it.
He said, if I have to take a dollar, I'll take a dollar. Now,
where'd
how many people
go?
In Sixth Street? Well,
does anyone know where that money went?
We don't know. Probably back into the general fund or whatever they call it. But
no,
he
donated it to a cause. Every month he donated it to a cause.
Yeah. So how other many presidents have done that? Tick, 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 tick.
Well, that's great. I mean, you know, that's good for him, you know. But still, I mean, that's not going to solve the budget anyway. It's not going to solve the problem. I mean, like I said, taxes and the tax dollars, it doesn't – I thought we already covered that anyway a million times. Don't pay for that. It doesn't pay for that. The Federal Reserve prints the money. It's fractional reserve banking, remember? It's all fake. It's all digits. It don't matter.
Yep.
Yeah, we are coming up on – you know, the tax revenues coming in aren't even enough to pay for the interest. I mean, we're coming
exactly.
up on that right now. Where it's not going to be enough to even pay the interest. And yet, you know, we've got to keep increasing government spending, you know.
Yeah, it's a lie.
Just a quick question out there. Who actually watched the GOP debate this past week? Did anybody actually watch the GOP debate? I did. You know, it's
a boring life.
It's comical to me because it's like all of these, you know, so-called conservatives are like, we have to reduce spending, you know, blah, blah, blah. It's out of control. It's out of control.
Isn't that funny?
And, you know, so they're doing this like, you know, one after another. It's out of control. We're going bankrupt, blah, 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 blah. We have to, you know, cut this and cut that. And then it's like 10 minutes later, they're being asked, you know, they're all warmongers. You know, we have them going, hey, we're going to increase our military spending. We're going to build all these Navy ships so we can compete with China. We're going to, you know,
lie.
And it's like, you know, it's like, how in the hell can you in one breath say we need to significantly cut spending, and then on the other hand say, we're going to spend billions and billions and billions of dollars more, you know, to build all these ships and stuff for our military. And then none of them, not a single one of them that are promoting all this increased spending for the Department of Defense, not a single fucking one of them will bring up the fact that the Department of Defense failed their financial audits 5 years in a row to the tune of $1.8 trillion, I believe it was, and that was last year, you know, and all that money is missing. You know, not one of them will bring that up. You know,
how could
so
you operate like that?
Cut all of these, you know what I mean? Yeah, you know, and now you want to give the Department of Defense, the only, you know, agency of our federal government that has been allowed to spectacularly fail their financial audits on such a huge scale like this, and now you want to fund them even more?
In your
you
household,
know, I mean,
in your household,
now.
Could you spend, like, if you say, like, if you were making 10 grand a month, just say, could you spend 50 a month? No, you couldn't do it, right? I mean, this would be impossible.
It's like, if I make $10,000 and I'm going to say, okay, well, I need to cut my spending. I need to, you know, not turn the heat on. I need to not turn the lights on. I need to not purchase as much in food. I need to rent out my bedroom. I need to do all of these things. Why? So that I can buy more guns and ammo. You know, that's essentially what our government is saying. And we need to cut all of these other things
And but yet at the same time, pay for more Navy ships, pay for more, you know, for the Department of Defense. It's like, what? No, the Department of Defense, their budget, you know, if they can't operate within their budget, and if they're going to be allowed to every year have billions of dollars just vaporize, you know, not to be accounted for, then, you know, my proposal is this. Any department, Department of Defense, doesn't matter what department it is, fail an audit. If they don't, if they can't, you know, say where all of their money went to, whatever that amount is that just vanishes and disappears and can't be accounted for is deducted from their following year budget.
They
don't
have a blank check.
Budget. They don't get more money. You know, they get less. You know,
they have a blank check on you, the slaves, us, the slaves. It's a blank check. All that spending is, it's fake anyway, because it's based upon us, the slaves, not our taxes, none of that, because we were bought the day we were born. And that's it. And you're a slave, and you're contracted into those municipalities, the de facto corporation. And you're a slave. And you must obey.
Oh, exactly. And then in the GOP debate, they started talking about Social Security. And almost all of them want to increase the retirement age in order to keep Social Security solvent. And I think Ron DeSantis, for a change, I agreed with him. He was the only one to say, you know, no, actually, it should be reflective of, you know, our expectation of, you know, our life expectancy. And over the last couple of years since COVID, life expectancy has gone down by over 2 years, you know. And so if our life expectancy is going down, and it's going to continue to go down, by the way, due to the clot shot, you know, 70% of Americans that got the clot shot, I'm willing to bet that we're going to be seeing more of a decline of life expectancy as a result of it. But at the same time, they want to increase the retirement age, you know, and it's just like, you know, this doesn't make sense. This doesn't make sense. Maybe quit borrowing from it, you know. And that's been going on ever since the Reagan years. You know, they'll do all these IOUs and take money out of it. But then, you know, okay, great, if maybe they actually pay it back, but they'll only pay back the principal. They're not going to be paying plus the interest and dividends all that money would have been making if it just sat there and untouched the entire time. You know, and so that's another way to scam people, you know, and that's another reason why Social Security is, you know, it's expected to be pretty much insolvent within the next, like, 10 to 15 years or something. And so that's the other thing. But all the other candidates, you know, they, oh, yeah, we're going to, you know, we don't want to touch benefits. We want to increase benefits, but we also want to increase the retirement age, so that, you know, they want it to be like 70, but they didn't want to commit to a specific age, which is the other funny thing. You know, it's like, how do you say that? How do you in one breath say that you want to increase the retirement age and then on the other breath refuse to answer what you think that age should be?
Yeah, but the people coming over here are getting educated, housing, and training for, you know, for a job, and they're getting all that, and they haven't paid in. So, you know, that's why we're broke. They're using our money to fix stuff that's not generating money, and then, you know, we got to work longer. And this ain't the Waltons where mom and dad moves in with the kids. There's going to be a there's going to be a lot of just give him a shot and let the family know his time is near.
Hell, well, they have a disparity for illegals in Chicago. Can you imagine that?
Don't you know why that they want you to increase the age to 70 or 75? They hoping that you fucking drop dead or they don't have to pay anything. Okay? You know, when you work your entire life putting the money into this and you're hoping for, well, when I get 60 or 65, I can retire. I can say, fuck it. I can go fishing or whatever. Okay, whatever I want to do. If I want to go out there and buy a backhoe and dig holes in my goddamn backyard, that's what I paid for. But when you hit 70 or 80 or 85, your days are numbered. Your days are numbered.
We right? had a guy here in Orlando that had he's not on anymore, but he had one of these financial shows where you call in every day and ask him questions about, you know, how to invest for the future and stuff, and he was dealing with how to, you know, aid your retirement, your Social Security with other investments. And so I called his office and I told him, and they took my number down, and the guy called me back and said, I never paid attention to this. I said, tell him to go through the obituaries and see how many people last week that passed away never made it to their retirement fund, the Social Security. You know, you got these people that are living 80, 90, 100, and 60s, but the majority of the people that died that are dying are in there. Some of them are younger, but some are in their 40s and 50s and never made it to their retirement fund. And he right. called me up and said, I never paid attention to that, but you're right.
100%.
What did they do with that guy's money? That you know, what did they do with his money that he paid in his retirement account?
They keep it back in the general fund and give it to somebody else, and then the scam goes on. Well, this next person, well, he didn't make it to 65. Oh, I'm sorry, I'll send flowers. Okay, we'll try to give it to the next person. Oh, he didn't make it either. Gee whiz, what a bitch. And he goes on and on and on and on. You know, it's a scam. I'm telling you, it's a freaking scam.
We're in so much trouble.
Oh yeah, we had some damn big deep shit. Let me tell you, okay. I mean, that's terrible. When you work your entire life, and you're hoping for maybe 10 good years, 15 good years after you retire, maybe if something don't get you with all the shit they put in the air and the water and the food and all this shit, there you go.
They need to make it so that whenever I pass on whatever I didn't use or if I never used it, I can leave it to my beneficiary, to my children, wife or whatever, grandparents, you know.
Yeah, nope.
But
the problem with that is, you know what the Democrats are for? Two words, death tax. That's what that is. That's what you're talking about. You want to leave it to your kids and maybe your grandkids or whatever? That ain't going to happen as long as a Democrat has one last breath, because they want that money to go back to the government. And that's why farms are having to be sold to big companies, because you know, if you want to leave your farm to your son or your daughter or whatever, well, they come back and they say, okay, after you die and you left it, you got to pay this much tax on this land and this much tax on this X, Y, and Z and all this stuff, and it's just better for that person to sell that farm. That's called, well, they call it an inheritance tax, but it's what they call a death tax, because they got to pay after your death. Right?
Same thing.
Yep.
Yeah, they got us.
That's when...
Yeah, I think that, you know, one of the things that was discussed in the GOP debate when it comes to Social Security, too, was like an income limit, you know, for the wealthy to not get Social Security benefits when they become retirement age, because they don't need it. And in some respects,
it's their retirement
fund. I think that there's, you know... but yet I think there should be an opt-out. You know, if I'm wealthy enough and I don't need to collect those benefits, I should be able to opt out. I should be like, no, you know, because a lot of wealthy people actually hate getting those Social Security checks. They're like, I don't need it. I'm a multimillionaire. I've got plenty of money. What do I need this, you know, $1,200 for or whatever? You know what I mean? And so, like, we should at the very least have an opt-out option when it comes to
But see, here's what's crazy is I have to contribute it. I have no choice. I have to contribute to – so that's my retirement account. But then they decide later that I don't get it or you know, it's because it's called a benefit, you know, Social Security benefit. Well, how is it a benefit if I put my money in a banking account and then decide I'm going to take it out? It's my money. It's my account. But see, that's why the whole government, we have a socialist system, you know.
What was it, Newsweek or one of those damn magazines that, what was it, 5, 10 years ago, they had a thing that said, we're all socialists now. A headline on we're all socialists now. That type of crap, which maybe is true, maybe it's not. I don't consider myself a socialist, but again, I'm not fucking Bernie Sanders. Or AOC, or any of those people.
Well, listen here. Remember what Ron Reck said, and he's proven it, that debt calculator or whatever it is, you can punch in your number on your birth certificate, and you'll see how much money you're worth. It's in the millions. You're worth millions of dollars to your government. You think you're going to see any of that money? No. So if they got a nice little bank account on you, they got a nice little fund on you, everybody in the United States that pays into this shit or has a birth certificate, for that matter, has that number on it. And go look at your little birth certificate calculator. I did mine. Ron did his. You'll be shocked. Like I said, it's a scam. And they're making money. They're making, oh, my God. Pike's Peak ain't even tall enough to the amount of money that them people are sitting on and making every single year. Sickening.
And
what's sickening?
And here's the deal. Let's just say, for the sake of argument, you're born... Okay, let me use my birth year. I'm born in 1972. All right, I guess so is Laurie there, but I was born in 1972. Yeah, 1973.
Right?
1972, whatever. But I was born in
1972.
I'm gonna be 51 in a few days. In a few weeks. So
well, yo, join your fart.
Yeah,
somebody, son, bitch.
Thank you. But let's just say for the sake of argument, in 20 years or 30 years, when I hopefully make 80, my dad lived to 80, our families generally live long times unless they have like, or were smokers or whatever, that type of shit, you know, or had like diabetes like my grandma, my dad, my mom's grandmother did. But we generally live a long time. So say, for example, in 30 years, I go and I'm at 80 and I look at that debt calculator with my thing and see, oh, I'm worth $10 million, you know, just a random amount, you know, like that, millions of dollars. But I'm saying $10 million. Oh, they're not counting on an 80-year-old person to go and try and fight the government for that $10 million. They're waiting for you to die so that can go back into the government, and they have more money to spend.
That's right. More to them. As long as they don't have to pay you, more to them. You know, it's a scam, I'm telling you. The biggest scam since, well, I don't know, since the history of the planet, I guess. You know, it's crazy.
Hey, think about this. Think about this. Generally speaking, the state of Louisiana has, at any given time, 7 million people in the state, right? 7 to 10 million people in the state, right? You take that, if each one of those people, now, I get that a lot of them are babies, all right, whatever. But if every one of those families take a look at every one of those birth certificates and go to that debt calculator, that 7 million people is probably worth, oh, trillions of dollars.
Hell yeah.
Maybe. It's not hundreds of millions, hundreds of billions. 7 million people? Go figure, right?
Who's chewing? Good gracious. Man. Man. Maybe the most thing we should learn is how to talk on these things. Man. Man.
Good shit.
This is the biggest, again, the biggest scam that goes all the way down to your local level, okay? Have you not noticed most of these cities, not all of them, but most of them, have you ever noticed that the nice equipment that they have, the work on the roads, the bulldozers, the front-end loaders, the backhoes, look at your local fire department, all them nice, fancy fire trucks that cost over $1.5 million each one of them. But yet, we don't have any money. We got to raise taxes. Where the fuck do you think that money's coming from? It's not coming from
even
the taxpayers.
Gunslinger's right. Just ask Ron Reck. Ron Reck used to be a damn volunteer fire department guy.
Yeah.
Even the goddamn volunteer fire departments are get $1 million trucks. You know?
I live right next to a little city called Red Oak, Texas. My God, you ought to see them, that equipment in that fire house down there. And this is three of them. They got a damn ladder truck that can reach 7 stories. Okay? And there's only like maybe 3 buildings that may be 4 stories tall in the whole damn city.
Mm.
And these things are fire rescue. The ambulance is like a portable hospital. I mean, it's fancy, let me tell you. If I was going to get in trouble medically, I'd want to call these some bitches. But, man, they got some fancy equipment, okay? But where does all this money come from? It does not come from the taxes because they're constantly trying to say, well, we're broke and do this and do that, but on a broke budget, they still come up with all this money? Where's it coming from? I know it's where it's coming from because they're playing the market. They're playing the stock market.
I generally like the work that my sheriff's department does, but you look at those cars.
Oh, yeah.
Woo, talk about new. Those cruisers they have.
You can have a party in the back of one of them SUVs. They've got so much fancy technology on them.
No, I'm talking about just the normal car, the normal. Cruiser cars, the cars, brand new cars. Not just the fucking SUVs. I'm talking about just your normal cruisers, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm not just talking about a $20,000 car. I'm talking about probably upwards of $50,000 or $60,000 just for a car, you know?
More because they're souped up. They have to be souped up for high-speed chases and all this shit. No, yeah. Corvette.
Yep.
You know, arrows.
Yep.
I got an invention that's going to make me rich and save the county a whole lot of money. It's a shovel that'll stand up by itself.
See you. That'll work.
Oh. Lord, don't get on me.
Go ahead.
Now, I wonder.
There's somebody that's in the chat already. Same IP address. You know, knock it off. Grow up. Jeez. Man, get a life. God.
Oh, boy.
Hello, man. Get a life. I mean, bro, what are you trying to disrupt? They're doing this every week now, the Lorianne Show. I mean, they're following me around, you know? I mean, you're not going to – I mean, what's the purpose, you know? I mean, you got something to say.
Well,
just
yeah,
say
not
it.
Just my show either. It's like you got your fan club that follows you.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean,
and
don't be a coward.
Yeah,
you know?
Like, that's the point. Like, hey, Jack Forsythe, you know, like I said in the chat room, if you want to talk about the debt, you want to talk about political issues, fine. But no, you come into the chat room and you don't talk about any of that. Your first comment in the chat room is, Joseph, don't you think that your own show is a better venue for your views? You know, so come on now, you know.
Come on, man. Everywhere
any of us goes, it's a venue for our own personal opinion.
Correct.
Absolutely.
I don't know who's chewing like that, too. I mean, that's rude.
Well, here's the thing, is that, you know, while, you know, everybody's expressing opinions, well, Jack also has his opinion, which he just expressed. So, I mean, it kind of
But they're doing it. They're trolling, though. They're doing this every week, and they're doing it on other shows, too. So, you know, it's not like you're really expressing an opinion.
That would just simply
just
not.
Yeah, you can tell when someone's harassing you.
Just not engage. If you don't engage, then there's no fuel for a fire.
Oh, trust me. This has been going on for years. It don't matter. It doesn't matter if I engage. They got a couple good ones, though. One time they put up on Craigslist, I was selling Lionel Richie tickets. They put my phone number up there. People were calling me and stuff. They come up with some good stuff once in a while, but after a while it gets annoying. I just don't want to disrupt Lorianne's show, you know, or have that. Because, you know, they follow me around everywhere. So, and they think, you know, that's what they're trying to do, get results.
Apparently, you just saying anything at all on the call, on this call, is enough to criticize you for. You know, oh my God, you called into a call-in show and you said something.
Get him! Get him!
I just realized we only have about a minute and a half left of the live broadcast. There is a minute and a half left of the live broadcast before we go into overtime. I know it's gone quick. If you're out there and you're listening and you haven't called in yet and you want to join us while we go into overtime, you can call in now, 563-999-3698, and you can kick back and listen. Which is great, that if you want to speak up, then press 1. That raises your hand on the switchboard, lets me know that you want to be brought on. And then also before the live show ends, make sure to stay tuned for a lot of the great shows here on Blog Talk Radio. Of course, mine, you know, every Sunday. But then we also have American Statesman on Mondays, and that I believe is 7 p.m. Eastern. We got Joe Gibson's show typically on Tuesdays, also around 7 p.m. Eastern time. And then on Fridays, I co-host Conservative Nation Media with Robert. And that show is 9 p.m. Eastern time. And then there is Donnie C's show, Beyond the Mainstream, on Saturday night Eastern time. So lots of great conversations. And then also Ron Reck. He usually does like a later night show, typically around 11 p.m. Eastern time, periodically throughout the week. Same thing with Jay Clark, also puts late night shows up midweek, usually Tuesdays through Thursdays or so, around the same time, around 11 p.m. or so Eastern time. So there's always some great shows here on Blog Talk Radio to tune into pretty much every day. Make sure to sign up for an account. You can sign up for a free account. You can follow these shows and get email notifications so that you can be made aware of when these shows are on and join the conversation when you can. So all that being said, we can resume the conversation and discussion
Looks like, yeah, we got some people that have called in just in the nick of time. So, good deal. Go ahead.
I said, has our Skype friend raised his or her hand?
There are two Skype numbers in the board. None of them have raised their hand yet. Looks like Montana Joe is also kicking back listening right now from the looks of it, too. So, yeah, they can press one at any time, and I'll bring them on. There was a clip that Second Amendment-related clip by Colleen Noir. I haven't played one of his for a while, but he just did a good one today, and I thought that might spark some good conversation as well. And this one is about New York. This happened in New York City on a subway. A passenger was arrested for firing their pistol in the defense of a woman that was being mugged. It's a pretty short clip. It's only 5 minutes. And so I thought it might spark some good conversation, Second Amendment related, that I know many, if not most of us, are pretty passionate about. So I'm going to go ahead and play this real quick. It's only 5 minutes. And then let's discuss.
Suspected of opening fire in a subway station, an alleged vigilante who police say used the weapon to try to stop a crime.
That one man who is being called a vigilante fired one shot. He didn't hit anybody, but he is now in custody.
Were you trying to protect someone?
43-year-old John Rote in handcuffs tonight, led away from the transit police station in the subway. Police say he is the man they've been looking for since yesterday, who allegedly tried to stop a mugging by firing a gun inside a train station. It happened around 9:15 Tuesday night. Police say a 49-year-old man known for swiping people into the subway and then demanding cash was also trying to mug a woman at the NRW station at 49th Street and 7th Avenue. That's when police say the so-called subway vigilante pulled out a gun and fired into the air. Law enforcement sources say Rote did not have a gun permit, but even if he did, he still would have broken the law. The only people allowed to take a gun into the subway system are law enforcement.
A vigilante just going out there taking justice in his own hands is a dangerous situation.
So let me get this straight. A woman is attacked by a man trying to rob her, and then another man pulls a gun and fires a warning shot or shots, scaring off a woman's attacker because the transit police were nowhere to be found to stop it themselves. But in response, the president of the transit authority says this.
Weapons shouldn't be on the streets of New York. They are. And if that occurs, then, you know, what happens in the streets, come down into our subways. We need to get a handle on the gun issue, certainly in the city.
There are two reasons why this was his response. One, he doesn't want to admit that the police can't always be there to protect you. And two, he's more concerned with controlling people than he is actually keeping them safe. If his ultimate concern was about keeping people safe, he would apologize to the woman and the people of New York for not being able to be there when she needed them. And that they will do a better job to protect the people riding the subway in New York. No, instead, he's acting stunned that somehow someone would go out of their way to protect someone.
I've looked at the video. It's, I would say, unusual. He sort of looks very calm, pulls out a gun, fires two shots, calmly puts the gun back in a bag and walks away. I mean, it is weird.
Actually, there's nothing weird about it. People are tired of being victims. The only solution the government ever has for people is leave it to the police. But the police can't always be there, so then they say, just comply. But people shouldn't have to comply with criminals just because the systems that the government has in place to stop criminals doesn't work. But the sick thing is, when people take their safety against criminals into their own hands as a result, the government treats the Good Samaritan more like a criminal than the actual criminals. When you treat Good Samaritans like criminals more than actual criminals, criminals will become emboldened and the citizens will become apathetic about helping people.
Yeah, Jason, we've talked to investigators who say, in point of fact, while this woman was being attacked, there were passengers on the train. They did apparently witness what was going on and apparently did nothing about it.
Now, I'll be the first to admit, firing a warning shot probably wasn't the greatest idea. But what was a greater idea? Was this man supposed to try to Brazilian jiu-jitsu the attacker away from the lady and possibly get hurt himself? Should he have shot the attacker and possibly get charged with murder? Or should he have just minded his own business and leave her to be attacked and deal with it herself, only for people to then point to him and say, him a misogynist for not helping the lady? Yeah. Honestly, I would need to see the actual video to better assess what he should have done, and even then, I'd be Monday morning quarterbacking it. Clearly, there is a safety issue on the subway that everyone seems to know about, except the transit authority has done nothing about it.
Especially when you're traveling at night, not so much in the daytime, but at night you do have to be a little more careful.
The few times I come here to visit, I'm always like very on edge. I live in London, but I'm more on edge in New York than I'm in London.
Metro's not like this, is it?
No, it's not.
The long story short, as I always say, whether you like it or not, you are your own first responder. No one's coming to save you. And apparently, even if someone does come to save you, if that person uses a gun to do it, the government is going to treat that person like a criminal. So remember, the government is in the business of control first and foremost. Safety is simply a talking point to justify giving them more control. They don't have any real legal duty to keep you safe anyway. So remember that the next time they try to convince you to give up your two-way rights under the guise of safety. And also, remember to head over to shop.mrcoleonnoir.com and grab yourself one, two, or three of our new premium embroidered hoodie. I'm wearing the black on black AK hoodie version, but we have them in all of our classic and new Pew Pew Life designs. So head over to shop.mrcoleonnoir.com and grab some hoodies because hoodie season is upon us. And don't forget to hit the thumbs up on this video, leave a comment telling me how you would have handled this situation differently or the same, and subscribe to the channel and hit the bell symbol.
Very good clip.
All right, there you have it. Yeah, wasn't it, though? Wasn't it, though? I want to see that video. Somebody's got to have it on X or something. Somebody's got to have video of this, of what went down on that subway.
Well, I'm sure they do. Oh, yeah, they'll surface. Just wait. Everybody got video cameras. Oh, look at her. She's going to get raped. Oh, let's take out my video camera. Let's record her raping and not try to do anything about it. Crazy, my God.
Yeah, just comply with the criminal, right? Yeah, that sounds like a great idea. Give me your money.
Yeah.
You know, get on the ground. Take off your clothes. You know, let me read
you.
Just comply.
If that would have happened, because I carry a gun, okay, here in Texas, he would be ground temperature within a few seconds, okay? And here in Texas, they encourage you to pull your gun to take control of a felony in progress. Obviously, that was a felony in progress, you know, being mugged or fixing to be raped or something. That's a felony in progress, okay? So you have every legal jurisdiction here saying, pull your gun out. Stop it. Stop the perpetrator by whatever means you have. And this is, you know, Texas is one of the most gun-friendliest states in the whole freaking planet, in my opinion, because I live here in Texas. I'm a native Texan, okay? Brandish it. I mean, you can brandish it. You know, I openly carry mine. I conceal carry mine. You know, I got my 9mm on right now. Okay?
Suppose if a police officer being beat the hell out of, then what?
Who now? You broke up.
Suppose it was the police officer that was being mugged and beat the hell out of, and a criminal trying to take his gun to kill. So what is the citizen supposed to do? Walk on by?
Here in Texas, if you see that, if you see a criminal jumping on a cop, you have the legal authority to shoot him. Shoot
apparently
the guy.
In New York, you don't.
Not in New York. No.
I do have a Skype number raising their hand, so I'm going to bring it on in. It might be Sarge. I know Sarge has been in the chat. Is this Sarge?
Yeah, I've been taking it all in. It's a very interesting conversation. But this is one that is kind of near and dear to my heart. Let me tell you why. And I'm going to get right to my point when I bring a general point up here about the whole Second Amendment thing. Now, we've got Constitutional Amendment that recognizes an inalienable right to keep and bear arms, among other reasons, not merely for your primary inalienable right of self-defense, which is your birthright as a human being, but also to function as part of the well-regulated militia that is outlined in the Second Amendment. And remember what a militia is. A militia is a body of citizens organized for military purposes, according to the United States Supreme Court, and every other definition I can think of. Now, what does that portend? What does that illustrate? It illustrates the fact that this country has decided that something that is usually reserved for the province of a state in most every country in the world, we have given our citizens the right to perform and possess the tools of violence that are common to those of the military of a sovereign state. Think about that for a minute. And this is, now, I know they try to inhibit every chance they get, but the Constitution says that that's what the citizens possess. Now, I know I'm getting to a roundabout way of getting my point, but here's my point. The purpose, the police power, which citizens rely upon to feel safe, is more actually a result of perception than reality. Because if you think about it, and I had to come to this realization when I realized that as a police officer, I was an armed historian. Most of the time, I got there after whatever happened was over. Most of the time. Now, I know police officers regularly catch crooks in the act. They stop murders. They stop rapes. I mean, I stopped a couple of armed robberies. I caught a couple of armed robbers right after the fact. But when you look at the number of occasions where that happens, with the amount of times it actually happens, to say nothing of the opportunities for criminals to do what they got to do, the ratio of successful accomplishment of it is almost minuscule. It doesn't happen for all practical purposes. The crime occurs, the victim either fights off the offender, they become the victim, or the victim or the criminal loses the opportunity to commit the act for whatever reason. Now, with all that in mind, what the authorities want to do is to give to the public the perception that they can control crime. Now, they know they can't, not in reality. It's impossible. Oh, yeah. You shouldn't even expect that they can't, not even fair to the police. But they want to give you the perception that they can. And successful police departments manage to do that by cracking down on the people they do catch, publicizing it widely, and letting it be known widely that this city, this jurisdiction, will not tolerate criminal action. Now, the reason we're losing a handle on it, because that part that keeps that perception going has been weakened ever since the death of St. George Floyd of fentanyl. So that thing that used to inhibit criminals, because look, the police are most successful when they inhibit criminality by vigorous enforcement and giving the perception they can catch anybody anytime, even though we all know that ain't true. And the problem is that now the police are losing that ability in many jurisdictions. The criminals are thereby emboldened. And now a case like this shows that the authorities want to even inhibit the right of the citizens to do this. Now, what they're concerned about now is maintaining a monopoly on the use of force. And that is not what our Constitution intends. It never was. It is a shared proposition between the government, the nation state, and the citizen. And all of that is being torn down now. And, you know, that was one of the hardest things that I had to realize when I became a police officer. This balance that is now being torn asunder, like I said, by the Marxists who took advantage of the St. George Floyd of fentanyl situation, and by their long march through all the institutions, and all these weak-minded public officials who infest the governments of these blue cities, mainly. I'm telling you, we got to get control of this. People like Colin Noir, thank God, he's telling us the absurd lengths to which these government officials will go through to prosecute citizens who try to correct this imbalance, do what they can to protect themselves and their neighbors and even strangers. I mean, I just hate that they are so invested in sending a message to the public. Thou shalt not defend thyself nor anyone else. Leave it to us, because we are the ones who are the custodians of violent force and power in society, and you will not infringe upon our rights to maintain that monopoly. It bugs the shit out of me.
All right.
You know what? I love what you,
you know
just
what's
said.
Really
and I was
crazy.
Kind of thinking along the same lines as well, because I was like, you know, I'm like, okay, so this guy, not, so now he faces these charges, but it was in the defense of somebody else. So it's like self-defense is negated. So even though you're defending yourself or somebody else that is being mugged or somebody's harming them, it's a clear case of self-defense, but yet you're still going to get punished, or, you know, you're still going to have to face all of these other charges, you know, firearm-related charges. This is also a scare tactic. This is scaring responsible gun owners from the impulse to defend themselves or defend somebody else as well, because otherwise they're going to have to face all these other charges, which I think that's a bunch of bull crap.
There's also an element
Let me finish. I think that we should encourage states to go, you know, if you use your firearm or anything else in the defense of yourself or in defense of somebody else, it does and it's a clear case of that, you know, and you would not charge that person for assault, you know, that kind of thing. It's a clear case of self-defense. Then you do not have, then you cannot tack on all of these other firearm charges, you know, along with it. Because I think it's going to be a waste of time. That case goes, you know, if that case goes to trial, the jury goes, well, he was defending somebody. I think a lot of juries would find the person not guilty on all of those other charges, which is a waste of taxpayer money. It's a waste of the court's time, you know, all of that down the line. Okay, go ahead.
Well, we understand, all of us here understand what should be done. You just outlined many of the things that should be done, the laws that should be in place, the protections for those using a deadly force or any other force in good faith, and the protections that should ensue to them. Everybody understands what should be done. You just outlined many of them. Let's look at the reasons why it isn't being done, because I think that is more important to an understanding of our present condition. And I'll tell you why the reason it ain't being done. The reason it ain't being done is because these politicians are instilling a sense of anarcho-tyranny in the public. They are imposing a condition of anarchy where they won't enforce the law, they won't allow you to defend yourself, where they will prosecute you for doing it, if you do, in order to get more control over you and to make you feel cowed, defenseless, and helpless. Look at what they did to Daniel Penny. Look at what they did to Jose Alba. Look what they did to that gentleman Perry in Texas. Look what they're doing everywhere where leftist Democrats reign. It's all of a piece. It's not like they... It's not like they don't know what should be done. They do. They won't do it for those reasons. I got a thought. You know, it goes back to earlier in the conversation. You can see our minds getting dumbed down. If I see some guy beating up trying to kill Sarge, I can't jump in and defend him or defend myself, and that trains the culture's minds to, like, you know, it's best don't carry a knife or a gun because you're going to be in trouble if someone tries to hurt you. And here's the other part where we're dumbing us down, okay? The port of Miami is owned by 49% of China owns it, and the two other 51% is split between two other countries. That means they can roll their battleship right into our port. And we're sitting around thinking, man, don't go grab your gun because they're going to attack us. Don't do that. Just listen to the commands when they get on the speakers and tell you what to do. You know, that's what they're doing. They're training the mind of America down to submit so that the resistance is not strong.
The guys prosecuted with Kyle Rittenhouse said.
So then, yeah. What about remember that big fat prosecutor, that co-prosecutor in the Kyle Rittenhouse case? And remember how he actually got up there in front of the jury in his summation? I believe it was his closing remarks. And he said, every now and then, you just got to be prepared to take an ass whooping. That's me paraphrasing what he said.
But I essentially said, you just got to take an ass whooping every now and then. I just couldn't believe I'm hearing that from a prosecutor who understands or ostensibly understands what the laws on self-defense in the state of Wisconsin are.
Yeah,
he would have gotten killed if he would have took a butt with him.
If we beat the hell out of, then we just take the attitude, well, you just got to expect to get an ass whooping every now and then.
Yeah, but that's the guy that
lay back and take
expect
it.
To get his butt whipped. A guy that expects to take a butt whipping is going to end up being dead. They're not just going to beat him up and say, hey, boo.
This ain't an accident. This has happened recently. The growth of this is a relatively recent phenomenon. It ain't an accident. They do not want you to exercise any measure of independence. They are trying to make you as dependent on government as they can at every level, even to the most basic level of self-defense.
Right. Well, there's a thing called defense of a third person, okay? There's a video that's in one of our chat rooms, and God knows what I'm talking about, of these two girls fighting at some subway or whatever, and at one point, one girl has this other girl down and is kicking her in the head, right? And if that situation presents herself, that girl that's on the ground is in serious danger of dying, all right? So you can take your gun. You should be able to, in that situation, you should be able to take your gun out and shoot that girl that's doing the kicking, you know? That's just the way it is, right?
Every single use of force statute that I've ever read in any state or jurisdiction in the United States always encompasses not only your right to self-defense, but your right of in use of defense of others. Every one of them does. They all have provisions for you to allow use force in defense of others, and you're not the one being directly threatened. But yet and still, they're doing everything they can to make sure that those provisions are weakened and attenuated, and we better do something about it by getting the right kind of people in office, because the issue is not what should be done. We know what should be done. The question is, why are they preventing it from being done, and why are they turning on its head what previously had been? That's what we need to answer.
Well, losing
the psyops. It's the media psyops. That's why.
A
convicted felon, you know, that got out of prison is allowed to defend themselves with a firearm. You know, they'll still face firearm charges because they're not supposed to have a firearm, but they're still allowed to defend themselves, right?
Of course.
You know,
but
that's the catch-22. And what I like about Colleen Noir's clip is he also kind of touched on the fact that this is, you know, the part of the problem that we're facing is this apathy. You know, so this woman is getting mugged, you know, on the subway, and there's all these bystanders just standing around like, you know, yeah, I'll record it, but I'm not going to do anything. You know, if all of those bystanders, nobody would have even had to have a gun. If all of those bystanders that were witnessing this piled onto that guy, you know, could have all piled onto him, pinned him down, held him down, till the next stop, you know, get the transit police. You know, every single one of them could have stopped it, but they didn't. They just stood there, not doing a damn thing. You know, and that is why the so-called vigilante guy probably drew his firearm and shot a warning shot up in the air, which actually I can't criticize too much because, you know, at least it was up in the air. You know, that with other people around, he probably couldn't easily hit the target, especially if the target's moving. There's other people that might get injured. You know, so the best thing that he could do in that situation was take his gun, fire a warning shot, get the guy, you know, stun the guy just by that, you know what I mean, to stop him from mugging that woman.
That's what I'm getting back to is this apathy,
this, you know, I'm just going to stand around and let this happen, you know, and instead of actually doing something.
Legally, a warning shot is an offer of deadly force. So if you're justified in shooting a warning shot, more likely than not, you're justified in putting the bullet into the individual you intend the warning shot for. Because when you fire a warning shot under most every statute I've ever read, certainly in the state of Illinois, that is an offer of the use of deadly force. And it has to be justified under the same conditions that deadly force directed at the individual would have to be justified. So if you can fire a warning shot legally, more likely than not, you can put that warning shot into its chest and center punch it. So I'm just saying, I'm not going to shoot a warning shot. If I think it's worth shooting a shot at all, I'm going to center punch that bastard.
That's why I got a laser.
Well, maybe that warning shot was a way to
pistol.
Get other bystanders out of the way, too. You know, that could be another thing.
Well, yeah.
You know,
but remember, if
you're
justified in shooting a warning shot, he's justified in shooting the guy.
Everybody else goes down. You know, the bystanders go down. Now they're out of the way. And if he has to fire that second shot at the person, you know, that's intended, that's justified. So, you know, maybe there's that kind of psychology going on is, you know,
well,
like, let's get all these bystanders to fall to the ground so that I can actually, you know, aim at the offender, you know, defend this woman.
I say if he's got to go to trial, if he's got to go to trial and he can make that rationale and justify the use of deadly force, no jury should convict him.
Well, is it not the duty or purpose of the government to ensure a safe environment for their citizens?
That is the generally stated duty of the police power. And what is the police power? The police power is that those sets of laws
is not a criminal, a citizen, and is due a safe environment in which to plan their trade.
Yes. Yeah, that's why we got the police power for government. That's why governments have police power.
Hey, guys, totally interrupt the conversation, but I think Valerie just messaged me saying that something's come up and she's going to have to sign off. So before she does, Valerie, do you want to say goodnight or have some parting thoughts before you go?
I would love to say goodnight to everybody. You know, as far as the conversation goes, you know, one of the things that stuck out that Sarge mentioned was that, you know, people rely on law enforcement, and I think that's half the problem, is that we are dependent upon them, and so we have created a society in which we don't normalize people acting in self-defense or in defense of the others. And so it's looked down upon, and that is reflected in our elections. It's reflected in our court system. And we need to start normalizing it again. And most of the time, you know, he mentioned them, you know, criminals not being afraid of law enforcement anymore. Well, they're not afraid of the people either. You know, being afraid of law enforcement may have been a deterrent, but can you imagine what would happen if criminals are actually afraid of the people? More so than law enforcement.
Now you got it. See, that's just it. They want us reliant on the government. They're going to get us from both ends. They're not going to let the police do the job. Then they're going to tell you you can't do the job the police are supposed to be doing. And then when everything becomes anarchic, then they implement more and more stringent regulations, rules and laws to keep everybody in check, and that enables them to establish tyranny. It's anarcho. Tyranny. That's exactly what we're witnessing right in front of our eyes.
Yeah, we just had last legislative session, we had I don't remember what the name of the bill was, but it was, House Bill 2572, something like that. It was a paramilitary bill. Basically, people could not, they made it illegal for three or more people to operate under a command structure, and a whole list of different things. And then also when they had an attorney that was explaining all this, when the state did, they explained that it was people acting in a law enforcement capacity would you would be violating this law. Now, she mentioned that it was, for example, if you have a business owner that you know, they're worried about riots in their town, so they can have family members come and stand with them in front of their store. That's fine. However, if they call up a couple of their friends to come and stand in front of their store with them, that would be a violation of this new bill, because then you have three or more people. While it may not be a command structure with titles, there is still an organizational aspect to it, and they are acting in a law enforcement capacity. And, I mean, it passed in our legislature.
Did this law say anything or make any reference to a sheriff's ability to round up a posse? Have you ever seen any of those movies from the 40s and 50s where it frequently one of the plot devices is the sheriff just calls out people to the town, tells them to show up at City Hall with their guns because he's going to deputize them, so they go out and be part of a posse? I'm just wondering. I mean, I used to see that all the time in them old movies. You don't see it all anymore, hardly. And I'm just wondering if this law you're mentioning made any reference to the sheriff's ability to convene posses or anything like that. I'm just curious.
No, it didn't make any reference to that, and I think probably because, you know, a person could be deputized, you know, and so then they would actually have the quote-unquote legal authority to do so. But they also, in this bill, they allowed for civil suits so that if you're with a group of, well, three or more people, and let's say you're meeting up in the park and doing whatever, and people feel intimidated by your presence, or they're afraid of whatever, you can be held civilly liable. They also gave them the authority to execute, basically like execute warrants. That's not the exact wording, but it would have a similar effect for them to do an investigation on just the belief that something was going to be taking place without really any evidence of any sort. But the biggest concern was the fact that they are not allowing...
When you're done, I want to comment.
Yeah, absolutely. The biggest concern is the fact that, you know, three or more people, if they are organized, if they are communicating, I'm sorry, during all of the BLM riots that we had during the COVID shutdowns, I stood multiple times with people communicating in defense of businesses. Because at the request of the business owners. I mean, and because law enforcement
That's what I was just going to point to. Isn't that why this law came up? Was because of the Summer of Love and Antifa threatening to come into residential neighborhoods? And my neighbors, I know we got together to figure out, okay, who's armed, who's not. If they come here, what are we going to do? And you know what I mean? So what we did then prompted this law to make it illegal for us to do that. So if we're if we have a threat of a mob coming down the street, you know, that it's going to be illegal for me to organize my fellow neighbors, because they're not family members, they're my neighbors, to have like an organized response should that happen. It's such incredible bullshit, this law that you're talking about. I'm glad that you brought this up, Valerie.
Well, the couple, there's a couple other things, because I just went ahead and pulled up the bill as enrolled. So one of the things they put in here is substantially disrupts governmental operations or government proceeding. So here in Oregon a couple years back, we had the Capitol, they had closed the legislative session to the public. And it wasn't until the third special session where it was noticed that, hey, they're keeping us out. We have a right to be in there. So people gathered. There was a legislator that had walked out the door. An individual caught the door. And the people wanted in. They had a right. Our Constitution, our Oregon Constitution, actually guarantees us the right to be present. It says that all proceedings are to be open to the public. And they were keeping the people out. So that was December 21st. I mean, it was – I won't even get into that. That would be like an entirely different show. But so ironically, they put this clause in there, you know, substantially disrupts governmental operations or government proceeding. So this was the December before the January 6th event, ironically. But it states that You know, if they assume exercise or asserts without legal authorization the functions, powers, or duties of a law enforcement officer, including a sheriff, police officer, marshal, other peace officer, and then it lists all these other things. I mean, it just, they, oh, I'd have to, where is it? I don't remember exactly where it is, but it's just we the people have a right to defend and come to the defense of our neighbors. If they ask us to be on their property, we have a right to be there. Law enforcement can't tell
Valerie,
us no.
I got like this point. Look, remember I just told you a little while ago about that plot device you used to regularly see in a movie where the sheriff would deputize people and just they just don't show up at the city hall with the gun, we're going after a fugitive, right? Well, the movie I'm remembering distinctly was a 1961 movie called Ring of Fire. It starred David Janssen, probably available somewhere on YouTube or something like that. It was shot in Oregon and set in the state of Oregon, and it features a scene where the sheriff of the county just tells all the people in the town, all the men in the township who could carry arms to show up, and they mustered them into a posse to look for these fugitives in the forest that had kidnapped the police officer. That was in the movie set in the state of Oregon. The movie's called Ring of Fire. Just goes to show you how things change in a relatively historically short period of time.
Yeah, I will have to look it up. Here's the clause that I was... So here's how they... When it talks about groups of three or more people, they define a group of three or more persons associating under a command structure for the purpose of functioning in public or training to function in public as a combat support, law enforcement, or security services unit. That is their definition of a private paramilitary organization. That is how they are able to criminalize three people who are not related standing in front of a business to protect it because they are acting as law enforcement or security services unit. I don't know many events we have had here in Oregon where individuals have, for the events, it's just been everyday individuals that have provided the security for those events. And they mentioned in the legislative hearings for this, they specifically mentioned Oregon 3%.
No rooftop Koreans for you, huh?
Yeah, exactly. I was thinking of the exact same things. Yeah, the Koreans that gathered to protect their businesses
property
during the L.A. riot. You know, like, make that illegal, you know.
Well,
you can't do that
LA
anymore.
Was it in what's that town in St. Louis, outside of St. Louis?
No, it was the L.A. riots. The L.A. riots where the Koreans were protecting their shops because the police wouldn't even come to that area. And so
their friends and family
got on the rooftops with their semi-auto rifles and protected
That's
their
right.
businesses
Shotguns,
because the police
semi-autos,
refused to do so.
And a lot of them were Korean War veterans, too, or Korean Army veterans. And they knew what to do, and they defended themselves quite successfully. And the LAPD told them, you're on your own. We can't get to you to help you. They were told that explicitly.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. So what do you do with a law like this that Valerie's talking about, and the police say, we can't get to you. You're on your own.
You tell them to go to hell, and when you go to court, and eventually you got to be prepared for all the grief you're going to have to go through, when it goes up to the Supreme Court and is ruled unconstitutional, because it surely is.
Well, we've got
I'm
going to
round up people that are poor. I'm going to round up people that cannot afford an attorney. Because their cases will get thrown out
you are aware that the Supreme Court in rulings that are still precedent and still stare decisis, the Supreme Court specifically said that the Second Amendment exists not only for your right to self-defense, but so you can act in concert with others for mutual self-defense. That's what the Supreme Court's already said. This law is unconstitutional on its face The only question is, it's going to stand as law until it's struck down. That's the problem with all these stupid things.
Yeah, there has to be a case, you know, that comes up in order to actually have it be heard. Yeah, that's the unfortunate thing about it. And, you know, especially if somebody dies in the process, you know, then, yeah. Valerie, you know, I got to commend you for bringing this up because, like, wow. Like, I wasn't even aware of this law until you brought it up.
Oh, yeah. It was – it passed in – oh, gosh. Well, just this last – towards the end of this last legislative session is when it passed.
Figures.
And
yeah, it figures.
It's targeting anybody that they consider far right. That's what it really is, because this isn't about because they're not going to go after BLM. They're not going to go after Antifa with this. They're going to go after everyday people that are working together to protect their businesses, to defend their property, to defend each other. And they, because they saw that happening during when they had all the different riots down in Portland. We had a couple protests that got a little sketchy in Salem. We had some down in Eugene. And that's what people did. People got together and did these things. And that I remember at one point in Salem, we had this was OSHA, and they were trying to shut down a business. She was the first one to sit there and say no. And so there was a bunch of people that showed up, and they stood there, and law enforcement told them that they had 10 minutes to get off the sidewalk. So people told, hey, if you've got kids or, you know, whatever, you can't afford to get arrested, now would be the time to leave. Well, I think maybe two people left. Well, 10 minutes came and went, and nobody got arrested because there was strength in numbers. But as soon as you pass a law, people are going to second guess it. They stood there because they knew that they could. Now that they actually, there's something that they could be charged with, I don't know how many people would stand together. Like, I mean, within the circles of people that I know, absolutely. I mean, I have no question. But when you're coming, you know, to everyday people that were there last time, I don't know that they would do it this time because of the risk that's involved. And it's all fear tactics. It's all about control. They don't want the people capable of defending themselves. They don't, because the second the people are capable of defending themselves from each other, then they are capable of defending themselves from tyrannical government and overreach. And they don't want that.
Well, you know,
that's where we're at,
movie?
Where people fear the government instead of the government actually helping them. Like, the government says, oh, we're your friend. You know, we're all about your safety and your welfare. You know, but if that was really true, then people wouldn't be fearing their government to the extent that people fear their government right now.
But
yeah.
You know another thing, though, that was interesting about that movie I just mentioned, Ring of Fire? They did not depict that posse as a bunch of ill-disciplined, silly, retarded, backwoods rubes. They showed them as behaving in a competent manner and one that was well-organized, and under the direction of the sheriff. They didn't make fun of them like you see today in movies whenever you see something like that happen. And as I recall, in most of those movies where you see the sheriff summoning a posse, they don't depict him in this manner of yahoos and roofs. You notice this is a recent phenomenon when they denigrate the idea of the civilian posse deputized by the sheriff. This is a relatively recent thing. Even in the old westerns, most of the times, the posses would be acting righteously as they pursued criminals.
Yeah, this whole conversation, it reminds me of...
Else.
Huh?
Here's something else to think about. We talk about people like... We talk about the word... You talk about the posse, but let's talk about the genesis of the word vigilante. Where did that come from? That term was an outgrowth from these things in the old West called vigilance committee.
Yes.
When there was no sheriff and no judges to take the cases, and these people would sit in jail, and they were causing all kinds of havoc in the towns, and they had no recourse. They get these committees together and go and mete out the justice, right? Mostly by hanging, but mete out the justice. That's where the word vigilante comes from, is these committees in the Old West, these vigilance committees.
Well, I'm going to tell you something, sir. The state of Illinois, of all places, which is now, you know, commie land Midwest, used to have a statute that any police officer or peace officer in the state, you know, because there was a differentiation in the law between what a peace officer was and a police officer. But any police officer or peace officer in the state could summon any citizen to assist them. And the citizen was expected to do his utmost, whatever that was reasonably considered to be, to assist the officer when the officer summoned him to assist them. And that person, when the police officer summoned him, was in effect a de facto deputization, and that person had the same authority to do what they had to do that the police officer or peace officer had when he was doing what he had to do. Now, I'm certain they repealed that statute. Now, I don't think that statute's in effect anymore, but it once was. And all of these things are happening to diminish the role of the citizen in the protection of his community and acting, as the Supreme Court has said, in concert with others for mutual self-defense. They want to weaken that notion. They don't want you to even think you should do that or even have the right to do it.
I hate to interrupt, but I really do need to get going, so I didn't mean to get off on all of this, but I started talking, and that bill is
I'm
a little bit of
did.
A pet peeve of mine, so I hope you all have a great night. It is always a pleasure. And
okay, Valerie. Take care.
You too. Good
Valerie,
night, guys.
Thank you so much. I'm so glad you chimed in when you did. You always spark a lot of great conversation. I know you have to go, but I look forward to next week with you. Always do. And I know Boyd from Alaska had high compliments of you. You know, you remember when we talked behind your back last week? It was all good. So,
hey.
Oh, I thought he decided not to.
I think it's neat that somebody in the room can say what they need to say without getting so over emotional. So that's a good deal, Valerie.
Oh, well, thank you. I appreciate it.
You have a lot of fans in the room, Valerie, including me.
Well, I love all you guys too. So I definitely enjoy hearing what everybody has to say, and I'm always constantly learning. And, you know, even if there's disagreements, you know, I can respect the opinions, and it makes me think. So it's always good to hear what y'all have to say. So y'all take care.
And also, will you do us all a favor as well before you go? Thank your kids for us. You know, thank your kids for respecting that, you know, this is your time and to, you know, not, you know, create a bunch of chaos and stuff. Thank your kids, really, because, you know, they are helping you to participate in this show, and so they deserve some credit as well. And that's one of the things that Boyd pointed out last week when you were off the air.
Tell your kids you raised your mama right.
So I might not let them know that part. That might go to their heads, and with having so many, I can't afford for that to happen. But I will definitely pass on y'all's appreciation. So they're pretty good, and you know, there's times where I can just mute myself and go, you know, take care of whatever needs to be. And then there's other times where they will ask questions afterwards about what were you talking about or what did this mean, and it opens up a lot of good conversations. So, and sometimes they just get a chuckle out of something that comes out of my mouth because they're only hearing one side of the conversation. So, they're pretty good kiddos. So, thank you.
I love it. Yeah, they are. Definitely let them know that they are appreciated for listening to their mama.
I will definitely do that. So y'all take care, and we will talk to y'all next week.
All right. Have a great rest of your night and a great week. I look forward to it. Good night,
you
Valerie.
Too. Good night.
Yeah, I think we ought to buy our kids. I think we ought to buy our kids 12 gauges.
Who knows? You got to ask her first if they already have their own. I don't know.
Well, just make sure you ease them into it so they don't develop a bad case of porchitis. You might want to start with .410 first. Kind of ease them up in the 12 gauge.
Oh, I can remember when I shot my first 12 gauge. My dad had a favorite Beretta shotgun, 12 gauge. And he said, here, you can shoot it. He stood behind me. I pulled the trigger.
That's what he did.
And as I went backwards, he just grabbed a hold of his shotgun so it wouldn't hit the dirt with me.
Yeah.
Couldn't care about me.
Well, you're not really the problem because you're not going to go off again, maybe, if that thing doesn't have a firing pin stop. So I got to understand why he would do that. Unless it was a single barrel shotgun. I mean, was it a single barrel?
No, it was a pump action. But
well, you have to worry about that then.
Yeah. No, he just wanted to catch his favorite shotgun.
Oh, okay, well, I can understand that then. You can grow back new skin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I know what y'all can play with. I just discovered a couple of nights ago. It's called the Zeus. It's the world's biggest air rifle. This thing is three times more powerful than a 9mm. It takes 1,200 PSI. Goddamn tank on that thing is 3 feet long, 2.5 feet long.
How much muzzle energy does it generate?
1,000 feet per second.
That's velocity.
Inch.
So that would be somewhere. What's the caliber?
72 caliber.
Oh, 72 caliber at 1,000 feet per second? Hell, that's got to be somewhere in the neighborhood of 2,400 foot-pounds of energy. That's right up there with a 30-06 or 7.62.
Yeah. It shoots a slug.
If you're close.
How much does it weigh? How much does the slug weigh?
I think it's 1,000 grams.
A little bit more than an ounce.
1,000 grams.
Oh,
well,
man.
Actually,
well, yeah, it's got to be putting up about that much muzzle energy, then. That's comparable to to a chemical energy projectile.
Yeah. You can look it up on YouTube. It shows a guy test firing it. My God, what a fucking man.
Yeah, because, you know the old formula, mass times velocity equals energy, and, man, that's up there with a chemical smokeless powder projectile.
Yeah, you have to have a compressor to compress the damn thing to charge it. 1,200
kind of bulky,
PSI.
Though,
yeah, I'd say it's a little bulky, you know, but 1,200 PSI.
Yeah. But at least you don't have to worry about running out of ammunition or propellant for it. Let's put it that way. I mean, air, all you need is to compress air.
Yeah, just air. You don't have to have no background check. You don't have no license for it or any of that shit.
That's right. Yeah, cool.
Hey, guys, we only have about 6 minutes left before we go into no man's land. And my switchboard shut down and everything. So I have unmuted everybody that was in the switchboard. And speaking of gun rights, since we've been talking about that, there is a 10-minute clip that I was hoping to try to get to, if you guys don't mind. This is an interview with Facts Matter Roman with Maj Teray, who's been a three-time guest on my show, or two-time, two-time guest on my show. And they did a really good interview. And so I wanted to try to play it before my switchboard shuts down with Maj Teray and what we need to do to stop the violence. And so I thought this would be also an interesting thing and we could continue the conversation. Do you guys mind sticking around, listening to this and then having discussion afterwards?
Don't do anything.
Yeah, roll it.
Sounds good to me.
It's your show.
Well, I'm asking.
But it's also a democracy in a way.
Sort of.
Only in a way.
I'd probably
sorta.
Play it anyway. But not if y'all are going to hang up because I played a clip. You know, I don't want to discourage you from sticking on the line. But like I said, the switchboard's going to go dead in about 5 minutes. So if I don't play it now, I won't be able to because I don't have a mixer. But I thought it was a really good interview. You can find it on YouTube if you want. But this is Roman from Facts Matter interviewing Maj Touré. We need to do this to stop the violence. And here we go.
Yeah, what you said is interesting. Gun control goes along with high homicide rates.
Absolutely.
Well, why do you think that is?
Because if there's 1,000 bad guys in one city where there's very few people armed to be a deterrent, it's like, you know, pardon the expression, shooting fish in a barrel.
Mm.
In areas that have more, you know, respect for the Second Amendment and Americans' ability to defend themselves, we have less violent crime.
Yeah.
If I'm the weirdo rapist, if there's a 70% chance that, you know, this young lady coming home at 2 o'clock in the morning is armed and trained and a safe and responsible gun owner, I'm going to think twice about trying to rape her. So historically what we see is areas that have more of a respect for the Second Amendment has less violent crime. Over the last 10 years, as violent crime has plummeted, licenses to carry have went up. Dr. John Lott did some great work in a book called More Guns, Less Crime a few years back, and it's an excellent study of how that deterrent, that respect for property, and I'm not violating anybody else's property because I don't want to be violated, and I don't want anybody to violate me.
Mm.
That translates into, you know, very simple cliches like an armed society is a polite society.
Mm.
So the data's clear, it's there, and we utilize it to strengthen America, working specifically, not limited to, in urban America.
Mm. So speaking of urban America, right, why do you think it is that this kind of mindset of more laws, more anti-gun laws, will translate to lower crime rates?
Einstein said the definition of insanity is doing the same thing repetitively and expecting different results. And it's political insanity. And it's just a talking point to people that are unaware.
Mm.
When you don't have the data or the information or you're misinformed,
mm-hmm.
you want to feel like safe. You want to feel like you're informed. And leftist politicians a lot of times, and again, these are our brothers and sisters on the left and right.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not saying this as an aside to attack. You know, it's just the reality. When you have those talking points that happen to sometimes show up on the left, that person says things like, oh, we have to do something. No, we don't just have to do something. We have to do what works.
Yeah.
What is going to minimize trauma? What is going to get our young people? 60% of the 30 to 40,000 gun-related deaths annually are suicides. How are we going to reach our young people, the big chunk of that, those deaths? How are we going to make them feel whole? Make them know that they're a part of this American dream. Make them know that they're a part of freedom and liberty. That is a more preventative measure, but that involves work. That involves changing some of our social constructs. That involves information,
mm-hmm.
and that isn't easy as a soundbite as we have to do something.
Yeah.
You know, so what, instead of just doing something that doesn't work,
mm-hmm.
let's do something that has been proven to work.
Yeah.
We already know that more gun control laws and things of that nature do not work. We have actually seen since 1990 when gun-free zones were created.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen over 90% of mass shootings happen in gun-free zones.
Yeah.
It does not work. If you are serious, politician, citizen, whatever, if you are serious, we have to look at what actually works and apply that. And what works is educating people and informing the people
mm-hmm.
on firearm safety, conflict resolution, de-escalation.
So along that line, it looks like you're educating people. You just started the Solutionaries Book Club.
Yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, so the Solutionary Book Club is just 1 month. Every month we pick a different book that when you follow our page, we just talk about one day, we just get on the live for an hour,
mm-hmm.
and we discuss what we've learned from the book, what we've got from the book, my take on the book, other people's take on the book. Not only just conservative values or firearms,
mm-hmm.
but also, you know, financial information.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one of the books we're going to pick up will probably be Modern Money Mechanics.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one of the books, you know, on a more basic level, you know, Rich Dad, Poor Dad,
mm-hmm.
The Art of the Deal, you know, or The Audacity of Hope, regardless of someone's political leanings. But just things that can be motivational, inspiring, and actually help.
I was just speaking with somebody from Brazil,
mm-hmm.
and it was the son of the president of Brazil right now.
Yeah.
He's a conservative. And he was telling me how in Brazil, the big problem that they have is that they have this new conservative surge, and they have a conservative president, but all the institutions are socialist.
Yep.
And part of the problem is that they don't have a culture of, like America does, right? And they don't have these great thinkers, these great conservative thinkers like America does. And it seems like what you're doing is really introducing that philosophy, because that's where it's actually, you know.
To preach to the choir is one thing. It's great to have meetings of the mind. That's great.
Yeah.
The people in here that learned from my presentation on the main stage just now, and the people are supposed to take that back to their communities and reach the people that have been told by certain media outlets, oh, this is a Klan rally. Mm. Every black dude that's in here is a sellout.
Mm-hmm.
Nah, and part of that problem is because the conservative voices that happen to be melanated a lot of times are corny. The hood ain't corny, and we don't relate to that.
Mm.
The reason why our work at Black Guns Matter has taken off is because we relate. We understand. I'm not gonna get mad at a guy that sold weed that has a felony on his jacket for a nonviolent offense.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not gonna call. I don't think that guy should be have his ability to voice himself through vote or through defending him and his family's life should be suppressed because he sold cannabis.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times we had conservatives that wouldn't agree with that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they would go, yeah, that guy should be locked up. That guy shouldn't have his rights. And that's just fundamentally wrong. And it's not in alignment with what the founding fathers believed. The founding fathers had hemp farms. Fundamental conversation of freedom. It's something that needs to happen. It's something that this room has to learn from me and our presentation, take that back to their community, and vice versa. They have to develop liaisons with people like me that actually have the ear of hoods across America, like not just, you know, yelling for one particular administration. Conservative values extend past any administration. This is longevity. That there's conservative voices that are not corny, that are from the demographic that listen, that we're developing those liaisons. Otherwise, you know, it takes you more time to get the same thing accomplished.
Like pushback in your own community when you came out as a conservative?
No, not at all. Most of the hood is conservative. For example, everybody's mom or dad in the community in the wintertime, close my door, you're letting the heat out.
Uh-huh.
That's translatable across most hardworking families.
Uh-huh.
Hey, okay, I'll make a good way for myself, but you're not going to heat the streets up.
Mm-hmm.
That's a conservative and fiscally responsible thing to say. You know, when you're talking about locking your door at night, I don't know who's outside. I don't know them. These are conservative values. As if anybody that's listening to that, if they're from Detroit, Chicago, Compton, whatever, Philadelphia, they identify with that. The problem is the messaging. The left has better PR traditionally. And a lot of the people that we have picked in a lot of these spaces, just because they're black and conservative, does not mean that the hoods are going to listen to them.
Mm-hmm.
And we need hoods involved. New York, 7-8 million people at any given time.
Yeah.
New York's not in that same city, is not in that same chaotic leftist agenda if we would have been galvanized in New York for a very long time. That's true of every urban demographic, you know. So I don't get pushback in my hood. The hood loves me.
Mm-hmm.
I have respect all across the nation because of our work. Because our classes are free.
Mm-hmm.
Free in the sense of other people have paid it forward. They volunteered.
Mm-hmm.
This ain't taxation where we're taking it from people.
Yeah.
The people decided to say, hey, Maj, we're going to donate $500, $100. So the people that need this information can come to these classes and learn basic firearm safety, conflict resolution, de-escalation, and that turns into a political voting block. They can come do that for free. We remove that financial barrier to entry. All off voluntarism. So we get our social, you know, and charitable, contribution there.
Yeah.
If people want socialism, this is a form, a small, slight form of that without redistributing wealth.
Yeah.
People volunteer to do this, and that's a beautiful thing. And so the hood love it. When you go in and you inform people about these things and tell them, hey, the guy and the women that you've been voting for forever are actually doing things that are going to restrict you.
Mm-hmm.
They love you forever for, you know, taking the wool from off of their eyes.
Yeah.
And that's the response that we get in every hood across America, all of the time. There's no Antifa or protests in front of our classes. One, we all got guns in
here. Yeah, of course. Yeah,
that's one
thing.
And two, it's the hood love it.
Mm.
We don't bash people on the left. We know that they don't have an understanding right now because we haven't read the same book. That's all. And they're still our brothers and sisters on the left. That's all it is.
So to wrap up, maybe in 30 or 60 seconds, what would you tell somebody who's not on the left, not on the right, they're in the middle, they're maybe not sure about gun rights, or they've never been told why America needs guns, why the Second Amendment is important.
Yes.
But all they get is the mainstream media narrative. What would you tell them?
I would tell them that you're being lied to by design. You know, some small, even people that identify as the left, their actual life isn't left.
Mm.
They're just voting that way. I would tell them that the people that you've trusted, rightfully so, have, you know, betrayed your trust.
Mm.
They've told you something that's in alignment with lining their pockets, and not strengthening you. Mm-hmm. They've given you free things for your enslavement, and it's not free. Freedom and free stuff is not free. Mm-hmm. Someone's paying for these things. So I would, you know, challenge them to look into your political choices, especially on a local level, and evaluate that very objectively. Mm-hmm. If a politician is telling you that you shouldn't have the means to defend yourself with a firearm, should you need, and I hope you never have to, mm-hmm. if that politician is saying you shouldn't have a firearm, but he or she is walking around with an arm detail, that is a contradiction. And why would you continue to vote for someone that's a walking contradiction of something that fundamental? Mm-hmm. Your human right to defend yourself as stated in the Second Amendment. So that's what I would share with them. Use that as the litmus test and make objective decisions based on a full spectrum of information.
Thank you all for listening to that clip. Like I said, I thought it was a really good interview. I don't know. Let's open up discussion. What do you think? Comments on the points that he was making?
Well, I like the point he made, although I would like to point out, though, that anytime a citizen's engaged in socialistic activity, it ain't socialism. It's voluntary activities and contracts between people. It's socialism when the government does it. But other than that, I pretty much like everything he had to say. And I'd like to just reemphasize the fact that the police cannot, never will be able to stop crime. They can never do that, no matter how good they are or how many you hire. I'd like to point out that a significant number of violent crimes occur in penitentiaries and jails, where you would think they got the most possible control, and you get murder, rape, robberies, batteries of all kinds occur in the penitentiary. But here's what the police can do. The police can give the perception that that can either stop crime or significantly inhibited. And that's what they're supposed to be allowed to do within the Constitution and the law.
Well, you know, remember that there is a Supreme Court case, and I think they ruled on it. I don't know when it was. You'd have to go look it up. That the police owes you no protection. They stated it. I didn't
that's
say
true.
It. They said it. Let that sink in for a minute. The police that we pay to supposedly protect us, everybody out here, they owe us no protection.
That's
they
true.
Don't give a fuck.
That's true.
Yeah.
And no, it's not and that they don't give a fuck. It is impossible for the citizenry to expect that they can. The courts ruled the only way they could.
Yeah.
It's up to you to be able to. But here's the problem. When they prevent you from protecting yourself, that's the real problem.
That's the real problem. The only the just like the Conan Noor and all these other, you know, YouTubers say that your best protector is the one looking back at you in the mirror.
Thank
you. Standing in front of the mirror.
Exactly.
That's it.
Exactly.
There ain't no more.
You know, and
there
to your
no
point, Sarge, it's like, you know, the problem is not even, you know, even when police are available, they don't act.
No.
I just saw a clip from Seattle this past week where Antifa was blocking the roads so that, you know, traffic couldn't get through. And there are police officers just standing around letting it happen. Go ahead. We're here, but we're not going to fucking do anything.
But
we're not
that goes back to my point I made a little bit earlier. These politicians, look, when I was working a job, I'm going to tell you something. This I can say with absolute sincerity and absolute empirically observed belief. I never saw police officers behaving in a manner that people complain about, say, what inaction. I'm talking about police not taking action when it's clear they're supposed to. I heard about it, and I knew it happened, but it was the relative rare exception. Nowadays, it's becoming the rule. Why is that? Because the political masters of the police are telling them to stand down and or we're going to ream your ass out if you do something that causes us to get a lot of heat and grief. So what do the cops do? They're going fetal. That's what they're doing. They are going fetal. Because it's one thing to be told, okay, you got to put your life in danger. You sign up for the job, you take the badge, you're expected to. But when you do your job in good faith and you still get all this grief, it's not surprising a lot of cops are going through.
Exactly.
Well, you know,
exactly.
You know, the only way that will, it would ever work is if you was like the president, let's say Trump, let's say, you know, he's still legally a president, you would have to have a complete Secret Service people around you 24 hours a day, even standing outside of your bathroom door, okay, if you really wanted real protection. But you can't have a cop standing next to you.
No, of course not.
Totally impossible. It will never be possible.
Exactly.
Okay?
Exactly.
It's you.
Here's a story that just happened 5 days ago. Up in Portland, police took 23 minutes to respond to gunfire under the Strange Bridge, which is in North Portland. 23 minutes to respond, and then they left, but they later found a woman dead 32 minutes later.
Oh, yeah.
So they respond, they leave, and a woman is dead. You know, what the fuck is going on here?
Well, gunslinger, there is one circumstance under which the police are directly liable for your protection. And you know what that is? When they got you in custody, when they have arrested you, or they're providing you protection as a material witness or other circumstance, that is the only time they are directly liable for your individual safety.
Yeah,
Look at two places, guys. Uvalde and Marjorie Stoneman Douglas. Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School, that cop should have went into that high school. He did.
Oh, yeah.
Uvalde, they stood around outside with their thumbs up their asses, right, gunslinger?
Yeah,
yep.
That's down there in South Texas, yeah. I'm sorry, but
those are
cowards. I hate to call law enforcement cowards, but those people down there...
No, that's appropriate in that case, gunslinger. Let me tell you why. Because ever since Columbine, every police agency ever, including the one I was a firearms instructor for, develop a theory of active shooter response, where even if you don't have a SWAT team available, you either take it on as an individual SWAT team member or an ad hoc SWAT team to go in and either drive the suspect to cover and neutralize him that way, kill him, otherwise neutralize him by wounding him, whatever you can do to ameliorate and minimize the circumstances until the SWAT team gets there. Every single department of any repute has adopted this theory, this doctrine, and this training. This I know for a fact because I called all over the United States asking other police departments for their training to see what I could glean